All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight.
All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Here until 5 a.m. It's Wednesday. That means Wildcard Wednesday. You're being Wildcard Wednesday. You can call in and request, text your requests in. We'll play them later. Wildcard Wednesday. And that's coming up later on. And that's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. Get your requests going now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200 for Wildcard Wednesday requests. Here's what's coming up on the show. Kevin Powell is going to join us, our good buddy. Kevin Powell, he reports on sports on Rokan Show every weekday afternoon, and he has a podcast called Powell at the Park. It's on WGNRadio.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at KPowell720. And he was covering spring training, and we're going to talk to him about that and just some more sports talk in general. It's always fun to have Kevin on the show, and we will talk some sports with Kevin coming up after the 1:30 news. If you want to feel old, Spinal Tap is... 35 years old? Is that what it is? 35? Yeah. 35 years old. We're going to talk about some cool facts about Spinal Tap and just in general about how funny that movie is. And then we might jump into a conversation about movies that make you laugh every single time you see them. And Spinal Tap is one of those movies. I laugh at that movie repeatedly. Even if I watch it over and over and over again, I still laugh at it. So we'll jump into that. We have some shocking TV finales from the past to talk about, and some forgotten 90s teen TV shows on the TV front. And then we're going to talk a little bit about brand loyalty, if you have brand loyalty, if there's a certain brand that you will never stray from, that you will always buy. We'll get into that, too. And our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected, though, is on our Facebook page, and that's facebook.com/Nick D Show. facebook.com/Nick D Show. So that's all the stuff coming up on the show. As always, get your requests in for Wildcard Wednesday.
Yeah.
That's 312-981-7200. That's any artist, any song, anything. And we'll talk with Kevin after the news at 1:30. So let's say hello to the crew. Ben Anderson's producing this morning. Ben, how are you, buddy?
Pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. You have a busy day today?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah?
Yeah. And teaching at the school, all those right. Molding the minds of future broadcasters.
Exactly.
And you know what? I had some texts last night. We never got to it because Dane and I talked about it while you were out.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I did not win as best production director in the company, but I was runner-up.
You were runner-up?
Yeah. So for those listeners that were wondering.
Ah, okay. Very, very cool.
Put that out there.
Very cool. All right. So Ben will be producing this morning. He'll also be playing back your requests after 2 o'clock. That's when we'll start Wildcard Wednesday at that point. So Ben's producing this morning, and in the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Hey, good morning, sir.
How are you?
I feel really good, man.
Yeah?
I finished a big project, and you know how that feels when you...
Yeah. Tell everybody about it, please.
It's called R. Kelly Offstage. It's a mini series I've been working on with executive producer Ro Coleman. And we kind of delved into these allegations against R. Kelly. And, you know, it's been a month of work, and we're done. It aired yesterday. Tuesday was the first day. Part one aired, and we'll get part two today, part three Thursday. And it plays like five times throughout the day. So But if not, if you don't hear it, you can always go to the website. But yeah, it feels really good to get that project done and take a shower.
Congratulations.
If you know what I mean.
I understand.
Because those allegations are, you know, if true, they're very disturbing.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations.
Thanks, man.
I'm glad that they're airing it. I wish I would air it during my show. I would love to air it during my show.
I know. They don't air, they air them. I think they air them. Well, can I plug it?
Yeah, of course you can, man.
It airs 7 a.m., 10 a.m., 1 p.m., 5 p.m., and 9 p.m., and that'll be today. Then part three airs Thursday,
at
and
the
then,
same
of course,
time?
You can always go to the website. And
those are
all,
those are always at the same times.
Yep, right.
All right.
Yep, 7 a.m., 10 a.m., 1 p.m., 5 p.m., 9 p.m.
Very cool. Very, very cool. By the way,
thank you.
Wow, that audio from the Gail King interview. Wow, huh?
Yeah, I'm scratching my head. I'm not a lawyer. I'd love to get a lawyer's opinion on why he did it, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah. Those are just clips. I believe it airs tomorrow morning. But
yeah, that's what I heard.
Or I'm sitting there
texting. Is it this morning?
I'm sorry. Yes, it's Tuesday. It's officially Wednesday. So
yeah.
This morning on CBS it airs. I think it's 7 a.m. is the airtime.
Wow.
I believe that's 7 a.m. Central. But yeah, I was texting Ro Coleman last night, and then we get this email from Ryan Burrow. He's with WGN, also with ABC, and
yeah.
he texted us and told us, "Hey, there's a new interview out there. It's airing tomorrow." So yeah, it's just one of those stories, and there's been so many. Of course, with Smollett in Chicago, there's been so many stories that just develop so fast you can hardly keep up with them.
Yeah, I mean, you know. This R. Kelly story, though, I mean, you know, it's obviously a national story, but it's been a local story here.
It's
forever.
Yeah, it's a hyper local story.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
yeah.
People in Chicago, especially the music scene in Chicago, have really been hearing this stuff for decades.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, really something. Well, congratulations on that, and I hope everybody tunes in. That's Vic. He's in the newsroom this morning, and. I also, Vic, think about movies that make you laugh every time you watch them. We're going to talk about that later. Like if you watch something over and over again and you still laugh at it.
Sure. Yeah.
There are many of those things that are like that. Not just movies, but also TV shows and stuff. Because I still laugh. I still laugh out loud at the Honeymooners. Like every episode, and I know every single episode by heart. I know every line of every episode of the Honeymooners, and I still crack up. I still laugh. Same thing with Seinfeld. Seinfeld still makes me laugh out loud. I could watch every episode and I still crack up. I mean, the contest episode, you know, where they're trying to abstain from pleasuring themselves and they bet on it. When Kramer comes in and does the slap down of the money, I'm out. I crack up every single time. I think it's one of the funniest single moments in sitcom history was I'm out.
It's such a great topic, too, because when you're growing up, I don't know about you. Well, you're an only child, right?
Yes, I am.
With brothers and sisters growing up, sometimes my sister and brother and I would communicate literally through lines of our favorite movies.
Oh, sure,
you know?
Of course.
I mean, it's
just
all day. You probably quote 20 different movies.
Yeah.
That's how we do it.
Yeah. And I do that with my friends. I mean, I didn't have I grew up as an only child, but, you know, like my friends and I. And we pick like weird, obscure movies to throw quotes around that like nobody would really understand.
Except
like,
you guys.
Yeah, except us.
Right.
Exactly.
It's so fun. Yeah, it's a good pastime.
Yeah. Exactly. But one of the movies that we quote from pretty regularly is what I maintain is the worst movie ever. And it's also the best movie ever. And it's a very rare and hard to find movie. I don't even think it's on DVD. I mean, you may be able to find a used VHS copy of it. It is this unbelievably horrible movie called Fever Pitch, and it's not the Jimmy Fallon a baseball movie or the British version of the Nick Hornby novel about soccer. This is a movie that came out in 1985. It's called Fever Pitch. Ryan O'Neal is the star, okay, and he plays Steve Taggart, who is a reporter who is doing an expose on gambling. So he goes to Vegas. He's kind of, you know, this undercover, you know, reporter goes to Vegas to expose gambling. And then, of course, he becomes addicted to gambling. And it is, without question, the worst movie I've ever seen. And I've seen it 100 times because it is so hilarious. Like, it is laugh out loud hilarious. And my friends and I, because I saw that movie with my buddy Scott. Scott and I went, and we were in hysterics during the entire movie because it's played straight. I mean, they play it. It's played very straight, but it is a truly horrible movie. Chad Everett plays the bad guy who goes around breaking people's legs, if you can believe that. John Saxon is in it. Catherine Hicks from Seventh Heaven she was on? Yeah. And it is really, truly just a horrendous movie. And we quote from it all the time. And my friends and I quote from it all the time. And nobody's seen that movie. Nobody. I actually have a DVD copy of it. Somebody bootlegged it from a VHS copy. So I do have a DVD, so I can actually watch Fever Pitch anytime I want. And I showed it to my ex-wife, and she, you know, I was like, you have to see this movie. It is the worst. It's the worst movie you've ever seen in your life. And she watched it and just on the floor laughing. I mean, at one point, the daughter is like, we're going to Knott's Berry Farm. We're going to Knott's Berry Farm, Ryan O'Neill's daughter. And just that line reading alone, it is absolutely absurdly horrible. I really wish that they would release it on DVD. I understand that there's people don't care about the movie. They don't know about it. So there's like no, you know, people aren't, you know, thirsting to get Fever Pitch, you know, on DVD or Blu-ray. There are just us few people who saw that movie, and we saw it. I remember Scott and I saw it, and we were in hysterics the entire movie. So the next night we forced all of our friends, like seven or eight of us, to go and see it again, and everybody was on the floor. When it came out on VHS, we used to watch it constantly, and then it never got a DVD release, and it's barely available on VHS. I think if you go to eBay and you look up Fever Pitch 1985, it came out in 1985. If you look up Fever Pitch 1985, you might be able to find, like, perhaps one used VHS copy of it. But it is truly, and that's what I'm saying, Vic. That was like we had our language of our own. We would quote from this terrible movie that nobody saw, Fever Pitch, and we knew, like, every line from it. So,
yeah, I mean, that's just, I don't know why it's so fun, but it is, you know, and back then, you know, think back then, the internet wasn't out yet.
No.
So if you really, do you remember, you could kind of, like you and your friends, you're quoting these movies, a lot of people around you don't know that this isn't stuff you're making up
right now.
So much anymore.
No, not so much. You can just Google something. If you hear somebody say something, you can just Google it
exactly.
With your phone and find out what's going on. So, but yeah, all right. So we are going to get into the movies that make you laugh every time you watch them after we talk about Spinal Tap. It's 35th anniversary of Spinal Tap, which I can't believe Spinal Tap is 35 years old. I mean, it makes me feel really old. Vic, you've seen Spinal Tap, right?
Oh, man. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
My God.
I love it. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
One of the funniest movies,
right?
Of all time. There's just there's no question about it. And the fact that, you know, most of it was improvised is pretty astonishing.
Those guys are hilarious.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and like you said, the fact that, yeah.
Yeah.
They're doing that on the fly.
Exactly. And we have other great facts about Spinal Tap that we'll jump into. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back... Denver's got a gargoyle, a talking gargoyle in their airport, and I think they're just kind of like adding to this weird conspiracy theories because the airport is very strange. Has anybody been to the Denver airport?
Yeah, I went through not too long ago. Last month, Gene and I did a day trip there,
that's
but
right.
I've heard about all
that's
these.
Right.
And it started way back when they made it. You know, there was this
like Illuminati stuff. Yeah. But now there's a talking gargoyle. You got to check it out, Vic.
Yep, I've seen it.
Yeah. So we're going to talk a little bit about that coming up here. And then after 1:30, our good friend Kevin Powell is going to join us, and we're going to talk sports. That's what's coming up on the show. Hey, by the way, I want to thank everybody for coming out last night to see Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. God, it's such a good movie. You know what? This is an old cliche. They don't make them like that anymore, and they don't. They don't make movies like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington anymore. That movie's 80 years old, came out in 1939, and it's timeless. It is as effective. It was as effective on the audience we watched it with last night as it was when it first came out. And Jimmy Stewart is just, and Gene Arthur, unbelievable performances. Claude Rains is great in it, and there were a lot of people in the audience last night who had never seen it.
You know, I mentioned to you, Nick, one of your listeners texted Patty's show. She was apparently with you this evening, you know, at the screening.
Yeah.
Said she had a great time.
It's great. And we're doing another Jimmy Stewart movie in April. It'll be April 9th. Normally it's the first Tuesday of every month, but I don't know, Vic, you know, there's something happening on April 2nd, right? Something big in Chicago is happening on April 2nd? We're electing a mayor.
Oh,
and I don't want to compete with the with the election. So
a little bit of an historic runoff election.
Exactly.
On April. Yeah.
So we're not going to do a movie screening that night. So we'll do it the following week, April 9th, and we're showing The Man Who Knew Too Much, directed by Alfred Hitchcock and starring the great Jimmy Stewart. So another great Jimmy Stewart movie. This one directed by the brilliant Alfred Hitchcock, and it's a terrific movie. That's The Man Who Knew Too Much. That's our next one, and I'll give you details. Tickets will be on sale soon, and you can reserve your seats, and we'll have a great time with that. But thank you to everybody who came out to Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. It was so great to see it on the big screen with a nice crowd. All right, let's take a break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about gargoyles in airports, which is a common topic that often comes up on the show. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, about 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 o'clock. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. And at 5 o'clock is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. At 6 o'clock, the great Steve Cochran with your morning drive. Coming up a little bit later on, we're going to talk about 15 incredible facts about Spinal Tap celebrating its 35th anniversary, and we're going to talk about movies that still make us laugh every time we watch them, and some shocking TV finales, and much more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text, and for your Wildcard Wednesday requests. You may Wildcard Wednesday! Get your requests in now. That's any artist, any song, anything. Get them in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. All right, as I mentioned before the break, Denver International Airport has installed a talking gargoyle, which is, it's actually really pretty, it's pretty creepy and really cool. I like it. And the scariest parts of most airports, this is a story from Mental Floss, our good buddies over at mentalfloss.com. Of course, this is a story that Mental Floss would run, no question about it. The scariest parts of most airports are the long security lines and the baggage fees. At the Denver International Airport in Colorado, travelers are also confronted by disturbing art, strange markers on the ground, and a demonic horse statue that killed its creator. These quirks have given rise to conspiracy theories that the airport is a center of Illuminati activity. And now Denver International is leaning into these rumors with a new gargoyle that talks to the customers. The Denver Post reports this. Now, gargoyles are traditionally thought to protect buildings, and then Denver already had gargoyles stationed at its baggage claim areas to ensure the, quote, safe arrival of baggage, unquote. Like those statues, the new gargoyle installed in the airport's concourse in honor of its 24th anniversary on February 28th looks like a normal stone statue from far away, but when guests approach it, it comes to life, reacting to their comments and holding conversations with them in real time. So they have a video that was attached to the article here, and it shows the wisecracking character didn't avoid bringing up the airport's reputation. It says, "Welcome to Illuminati headquarters. I mean Denver International Airport," he tells one passerby. He also says that he's 243 years old and the first Illuminati met in Bavaria. 243 years ago. The gargoyle is a part of a larger campaign from the airport that embraces the conspiracy theories surrounding it. Last year, Denver International hung posters referencing aliens, Freemasons, and lizard people outside an off-limits construction zone. So it's, I bet people, you know, if you don't know this and you're walking through and the gargoyle starts talking to you, I wonder how many people completely freak out. You know what I mean?
There's got to be plenty.
Absolutely. And if it's, like, interactive, I think it's good. And by the way, one of the things I love, he's on a big pedestal. So he's on a pedestal as you walk by. He's on a pedestal. And he is actually in a suitcase. Like, it's an open suitcase. And the gargoyle is in an open suitcase. So he's in the luggage. He's in your luggage. So I got to say, I think that the people who run this airport are cool. I think it's hilarious. I think it's hilarious to add all these weird things. Because, you know, like, you go to an airport, you know, every airport, most airports look the same. Most of them do. and you have to go. I mean, you just went to New York, you know.
Yeah, I was just at two of them.
Yeah, and you go. And now, where did you land? Did you land at LaGuardia?
I went into JFK and flew out of LaGuardia.
Oh, okay. I'm surprised you were able to fly out of LaGuardia without a nine-hour delay.
I had a very short one.
Yeah.
Thankfully.
I don't think you can leave LaGuardia without a delay. I just think LaGuardia is one of the worst airports in the country. It really is. They should have some gargoyles there.
I have a newfound respect for our TSA agents here in Chicago.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Compared to how long it took me to get through there.
I can imagine. I can imagine. Well, anyway, if you want to have fun at an airport, and that's usually not something that you want to do because you're usually just like waiting for a plane or picking somebody up, or eating some Cinnabon. Denver International Airport is embracing the weirdness, and I think it's awesome.
I might make a weekend trip now.
I think it's awesome. I want to see the gargoyle. I want to meet the gargoyle. I love that. Welcome to Illuminati headquarters. Denver International Airport. So, anyway, Denver International Airport, and they're going to keep those conspiracy theories alive and well. I love it. I think that's a great story. All right, just wanted to share that with you. A pretty amusing little story that's happening right now. So next time you go to Denver, say hi to the gargoyle. Or just walk past and freak out when he starts talking to you. All right, we're going to break here. We got the news coming up. Kevin Powell is going to join us, sports reporter and anchor for WGN Radio. You can hear him every weekday afternoon on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. He's a podcast called Powell at the Park. It's on WGNRadio.com. You can follow him on Twitter at KPowell720. Lots of sports stuff to talk about, especially spring training stories. And that's all going to be coming up right after we take a break for the news, which is next.
Just one look at you, and I know it's going to be a lovely day.
Everybody, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, and we are going to talk a little bit later on about it's the 35th anniversary of Spinal Tap, if you can believe that. So we've got some facts about Spinal Tap. We're going to talk about movies that make us laugh, because Spinal Tap is a movie that makes me laugh, and we'll get into some of that. And also some shocking TV finales, like shows that were that made you rethink the entire show when the finale happened, and that's coming up as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text, and you can also get your Wildcard Wednesday requests in. Wildcard Wednesday requests. So that's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. So that's all coming up. Right now, though, you heard Bill Withers. You know what happens when you hear Bill Withers. It means Kevin Powell is going to join us. Kevin is a sports reporter for WGN. You can hear him in the afternoons right here on WGN Radio on Rose Show. You can listen to his podcast, Powell at the Park, on WGNRadio.com. And you can follow him on Twitter at KPowell720. And it's always fun to talk sports with Kevin. And here he is. Hey, Kevin, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Nick. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, are you still in Arizona?
Unfortunately not. I wish I was. I absolutely love it out there for obvious reasons, especially this time of year, Nick. It's a bit cold right now.
Yeah, it is. It's ridiculous. This winter is just not going to, it just seems like it's not going to end. It's just,
it won't budge. Hey, by the way, TV endings, I know this is obviously going to come up, but for me, this is such an obvious choice, but the, like, I think it's a monthly type thing for me to talk about the ending of Sopranos. And I don't know if it necessarily changes the whole series for me, but at least it's a point of conversation.
It certainly is.
For me and some of my buddies. Well, no, so I'm sure you're going to get into that. No, but that's an obvious one for me.
There's no question that the Sopranos is going to come up when we talk about TV finales. Because it was such a divisive finale. You know what I mean? Like, some people hated it. Some people loved it. Some people were baffled by it, so we'll definitely get into that. So but that's all coming up. Let's talk a little sports. Well, obviously, you know, you've been doing your well actually, first of all, tell everybody about the Powell at the Park. What have you been doing some new podcasts? What do you got going?
Yeah, I had some fresh stuff out at spring training. I'll have something new probably this week, actually. But the latest stuff was a blog on Manny Machado, obviously, which I think the last time I was on with you, that was much of the conversation, is where would Manny Machado sign? Turns out not with the White Sox. So it's WDGNradio.com. You go to the sports section. I do a blog. Picks up, you know, obviously a lot during the baseball season. And there's a podcast that I like to do as well, so you can check some stuff out there. But, yeah, Manny Machado was the obviously big story.
Clearly.
Out of camp when I was there, yeah. So, I think it was my second to last day. I was on the backfield, the practice field, and we're all kind of just standing around, us reporters, just watching them kind of warm up. And everybody starts feeling their phones buzzing and ringing, and we all kind of, next thing you know, you just see everybody's face buried in their phones, and that's when we got the news, Manny Machado going to the Padres,
right.
Not your Chicago White Sox.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I want to get to that in a little bit. Now, speaking of deals, what's your take on this Bryce Harper thing?
It's interesting because the Dodgers had reportedly offered him a 4-year deal, which is obviously much less than what he signed for years wise with the Phillies and money wise, but the deal reportedly was worth $45 million a year, which would have shattered basically every average annual value for any player, really, ever, definitely in baseball. So that would have been $45 million a year. It's crazy. I mean, it's insane, but it's basically what I anticipated. I mean, with the $300 million is what we had heard for so long with Harper. And once Machado got $300, there really wasn't much doubt that Harper was going to get $320 or $330 because Harper wasn't going to settle until he got the largest deal.
Yeah.
Now, he makes less per year than Machado. Because it's spread out over 13 years. You know, Machado got 10 years, $300 million. Harper got $330 over 13 years. So it's less money per year. He's talked about how, you know, that gives the Phillies some flexibility. Believe it or not, it does, because it's $6 million a year compared to $30 or $35 million a year, even
yeah.
$40
million. Yeah.
So that's kind of what he talked about. And he's a family man. And he's, he talked about kind of planting his feet in one spot and just basically finishing his career with one organization in one city.
You know, when I heard 13 years, I was like, what? I mean, is that a record? Did that set something?
Years-wise, it's a good question. I don't know officially if that did, but I was surprised, too. I think a lot of people were surprised to see 13 years. I think when people saw Machado sign 10 years, $300 million, you figure Harper would get maybe 10 years, $320 million, just to beat Machado by a little bit.
Right.
And there was also talk Harper could end up settling for a shorter deal. Like I said, 4 years, the Giants had come into the equation. The Phillies had reported, I think, started at about 8 years and it ended up at 13. So it's crazy. I wasn't anticipating that. But 2032 is when Bryce Harper is signed through with the Phillies, which is just crazy to think of.
No, seriously, it's nuts. I mean,
and it's hard to justify. And I was telling Sox, I debate with Sox fans about the whole Machado thing and Sox missing out on that. It's really hard to justify return on investment for a $300 million deal. Bryce Harper is going to be 39 by the time he finishes his deal.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to tell me he's going to be worth that money when he's. You got to figure he's going to decline at some point. I mean, every single player, no matter how good they are throughout their career, they're always declining. On the back end of 30 and things
sure,
like that. I mean,
sure.
you look at the Miguel Cabrera deal with the Tigers, Albert Pujols with the Angels now. Now Harper and Machado were different because they entered free agency in their prime, 26, 27. A lot of these guys get signed when they're 30. So I think the thinking for a lot of these teams is, look, the Phillies have already sold a crazy amount of extra tickets right after.
Oh, sure.
Harper, the Padres reportedly have sold like an extra $2 or $3 million worth of tickets.
Yeah.
So teams can justify it. I think on the back end of both these deals, it's going to be, we're all kind of, we'll look back at this moment and be like, remember when we said this deal probably wouldn't work for the second half of the deal? But
right.
I think a lot of teams are willing to, bite the bullet and say, let's win now. Even if half the deal works, that's 6-7 years of really good, really high-end play for a guy.
Yeah, I'm guessing, Kevin, that, we're going to see, some concession prices go up.
ticket
prices are probably going to go up.
Team, The one team in pro sports, at least here in the U.S., who's actually slashing concession prices. I don't know if you followed the story over the past 2 years, Nick, but the Atlanta Falcons, they built that, you know, that crazy like billion-dollar stadium in Atlanta with the crazy roof and all that.
Yeah,
they actually decided to basically experiment with it and try a whole different route and like basically charge normal prices that you would expect, like. Like, instead of $8 for a hot dog, it's $2 for a hot dog.
Mm.
And for a pretzel, it's like $2 a pretzel. And they've actually found that they're actually making more money because fans aren't afraid to go into the stadium, you know, earlier, right when the gates open. A lot of times people wait, well, I'll have one extra drink out in the parking lot, and then we'll walk over and we'll get there right for kickoff because I don't want to buy another $50 worth of refrigerator. So I don't know. It's getting a little off topic here, I love that story, and I love that the Falcons are doing that because I think a lot of teams, especially if you don't sell out all the time, like you're asking fans to go see a team that's not good by, you know, $8 hot dogs and $10 cheeseburgers. It's just kind of hard for a lot of people to swallow, especially if you're watching a bad team.
I will say this. They also do a lot of great food and drink deals at Guaranteed Rate.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, you get Dollar Wednesday. Of course, I know all the food specials. Wednesday nights, you can get a hot dog for $1. They've got all kinds of specials. And the Sox do some of the great promotional giveaways and things like that for games, and I think your dollar will go a little bit farther with the Sox compared to some other ballparks around baseball.
There's no question about it. Now, speaking of Sox real quick, I want to get back to we definitely have to get back to all the stuff, the reporting that you did at spring training. I definitely want to get into that. But speaking of the Sox, when is the day where you get to go to Guaranteed Rate and eat, where you get to sample all the new menu items and stuff?
That is a great question, Nick. Normally, us reporters are like just staring at our laptops all offseason, waiting for that email. Normally, it's about 2 weeks or so before the season starts, so pretty soon. I gotta keep an eye out for that email. I'm glad you reminded me, Nick.
Yeah, I was gonna say
that's a big one. That's a big one for us.
We got to put that on your radar, man. You know,
When you work in the media, you never pass up free food, right?
No, absolutely not. You know, yeah,
it's always jam packed too, which is hilarious. Like, nope, I see the same reporters there every year. Even Dave Bennett, I dragged him out there last year, and he's, you know, they're giving us like these crazy food options, cheeseburgers and beefs and all the other things, and I turn around and Dave is somehow eating a salad. I go, Dave, how did you find a salad at the ballpark? But you know how Dave is, he's the health nut.
No, he is. And if anybody's gonna find a salad, it'll be Dave Bennett. Yeah, it'll be Dave Bennett. He'll find the salad.
I don't know if he was gnawing on like the garnish, you know, around a food tray or something, but it was green and it looked like a salad, and he found it. So,
of course he did.
It was impressive. Yeah. That's Dave for you.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds like a really fun day at the park, man. Just, you know, checking out.
It
all
is. You should come out there.
Yeah.
I feel like that's right up. You should come out. I'll forward you the email. We'll go as a group. So I think last year we had like the group keeps growing because I keep telling everyone at GN about it, and the next thing I know, it's just like it was just me, and then now there's like, you know, last year we had like five people out there. So hey, if you want to come with Nick, I think you'd enjoy it.
Okay, just check out the new food out at Guaranteed Rate. So there you go. Yeah. Okay, listen, Kevin, hang on. Okay, man.
Yeah,
we're gonna take a break. When we come back, all of your recent stories about your spring training and your other stories, we're gonna get to in a second. Okay.
All right, you got it.
All right, Kevin Powell is with us, and you can follow him on KPowell720 on Twitter, and you can listen to him every weekday afternoon with Rokan doing the sports there. And again, his podcast is Powell at the Park on WGN Radio, and he writes a bunch of stories that he files as well. And we're going to jump into that and more sports talk with Kevin right after we break here on 720 WGN.
Lean on me.
Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here until 5 a.m. Wildcard Wednesday.
You're Wildcard Wednesday.
That will commence in just a few minutes here, so get your requests in right now. The lines are open, 312-981-7200. Any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. Kevin Powell joins us, which is why we're playing some Bill Withers for you. He is a sports reporter and anchor for WGN Radio. You can hear him afternoons right here on 720 WGN. You can follow him on Twitter at kpowell720. And we welcome Kevin back to the show. Kevin, welcome back.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Anytime for you guys.
I love you, man. Let's get back to, real quick, before we jump into spring training and all the coverage that you did and the stories that you've been writing about it, the Blackhawks have taken a turn for the worse. You know, the last time you were on with us, we were talking about how much fun and exciting it was at that time to watch. And it's kind of fallen apart, and now they desperately need to win a ton of games at this point. There's not a lot left.
Yeah, you know, there was the two games I think I'll look back on, and it's not over yet. They can pull off a miracle here. These games still matter a lot. It was, I think, just last week, 2 weeks ago, they had that two-game stretch against the Avalanche and the Stars. And I think at that point, going into that 3-day stretch, two-game stretch, they had clawed their way to like 2 points out of the wild card.
That's right. Yep.
And there was a shot going into a Thursday Saturday situation, or Friday Sunday, whatever it was. And if they had won both those games, they would have held one of the wild cards. And they lost both those games, I think, by a total of 2 goals.
Yep.
They didn't get a single point out of it, and that's the little week, you know, half-week stretch I'll really think back on. Because I felt like if they took those two games against two division opponents, two teams in the playoff race, they would have been climbed their way right back into it. And the next thing you know, they're 6 points back of the wild card.
Yeah.
So, it's been a tough stretch. But at least, you know, they've made the games meaningful for the past month or so now.
No, they have. And certain players are really stepping up. And obviously the season that Kaner is having is insane. And,
unbelievable.
I mean, really unbelievable.
And DeBrincat and even Tate. And how about Dylan Strome, since they traded for him in late November?
No, he's on fire. And what about Gustafson, who was a healthy who was like a healthy scratch twice in December, and he's come back and he's averaging a point a game now.
I think he's got a point in 12 of his last 14 games or something like that.
It's crazy.
And, I think he's got 15 points total in that stretch. So, you know, a lot of guys, they went through a crazy weird stretch where your Hall of Fame coach is all of a sudden gone. You got to buy into sort of a new format with Jeremy Colleton, who honestly, I think, with all things considered, has done a pretty good job here with kind of taking over in a really rough stretch for the Blackhawks. He's got to take over for Q. A lot of fans were a little frustrated with how things started at the year. So, you know, in I think you got to respect what Jeremy Colleton's done so far.
Oh,
and you started to see them like kind of buy into his style, and you've seen guys really performing well. It's just been the defensive side of things that's really been a struggle for them basically all season. But, you know, there's been a lot of good positives, and we still got, 16 games left here. So, it's not over yet.
Yeah.
I'll just say that.
Yeah. I mean, I'll watch every one of those games, too. So,
no question.
So,
no question.
Let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned Machado. You wrote a piece about how the White Sox need, it's time to move on. What was your gist on that?
Yeah, I just think that it was such, I'm not going to deny it. It was deflating at Camelback Ranch, the spring training home for the White Sox, when we got that news. Kenny Williams, longtime team exec, I watched him walk over to Rick Renteria, who was watching some batting practice, and he was talking to Renteria's ear just minutes after the news broke, and Renteria kind of slumped his shoulders a bit, and then Kenny met with reporters, and Kenny was deflated, he was disappointed. They thought, the thing with this is the White Sox thought they had the best offer.
Yeah.
And, you know, for any frustrated Sox fans out there, I get it. I get it because the Sox told you that they were going all in on Machado, but don't play this Sox are cheap card or anything like that. They were prepared to give a player at minimum $250 million. The deal ended up being $250 million with incentives that could have took it over to $350 million, which is more than what he signed with the Padres, and he just would have had to earn it in incentives, games played, honors, things like that, that get put into contract. They lost out. They maybe miscalculated on their offer. And, you know, the one question I proposed to frustrated Sox fans, look, let's say the Sox offered the exact same deal to Manny Machado as the Padres did. Maybe Manny Machado just wanted to play for the Padres.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a major decision. You're signing a 10-year deal for whatever reason he decided, whether he, you know, the Padres have the top 1, 2, 3 farm systems. They're right there with the Sox. They're loaded with prospects. They're in a very similar spot as the Sox. For whatever reason, he chose the Padres. And if it was simply came down to $50 million in base salary, I don't know how frustrated you can really be. If you're the White Sox, I mean, I understand it's disappointing because you basically have for months now, and really maybe even longer than that, because this has been one of the most anticipated free agency periods in years with Harper and Machado hitting the market.
Right, right.
It's just, I get it. I get it on all sides. I just don't think there may be so many overreactions from a lot of fans because, you know, I thought the Sox did make a pretty good pitch for him. I really do.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. Okay, keeping up with your spring training notebook, Tom Ricketts did some talking. Tell me about that.
Yeah. It was, it was an interesting week when I was out there because there was the news with the Sox, and that was disappointing, losing out on Machado. And then the Cubs started kind of on a weird note because Ricketts was kind of answering for a lot of things. There was, I mean, geez, he was even talking about, you know, the Aldermanic race in the 44th Ward because they didn't want Tom.
Right.
I mean, it was weird. Yeah. There was a lot of political stuff with the Cubs as well. There was talk about Joe Maddon as a lame duck manager going into a season. So there was a lot of talk there. There was a lot of talk about their new broadcast deal. Which some fans are, I think, very intrigued to see how that plays out. But it's no question going to cost you more money. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah.
So it was just sort of kind of a weird week for the Cubs to start when I was out there because Tom Ricketts always got sort of a state of the team address to kick things off, and it wasn't exactly sunshine and rainbows like it has been the past few years. Maybe, you know, especially off that World Series year, and even going into the World Series year, it was just so much kind of fun. And I'm not saying it still isn't. I still think the Cubs have the mojo. I still think they're going to compete, but they've got a very difficult division this year. I mean, very difficult. You saw what the Cardinals did, getting Goldschmidt, the Brewers. Didn't get any worse, and they won the division, and even the Pirates and Reds gave them some trouble. So, I think the Cubs got a really good shot. I think they probably have the best starting rotation definitely in the National League. I mean, top to bottom, the addition of Cole Hamels and what he did last year, you're looking at Lester, Hendricks, Quintana, Hamels, and who am I missing? Tyler Chatwood will not be. And Yu Darvish. Yu Darvish is having a great spring. He's throwing 97. He says it's the best he's felt. So that's huge news for the Cubs and for Cub fans. I think they're going to be in a pretty good spot this year as long as they stay healthy.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm loyal to the team, but there are some weird things surrounding the team right now. And you know, you mentioned the Cubs TV network deal, the Tom Ricketts talking, weird stuff, and then the whole Addison Russell thing has been a cloud,
right?
You know what I mean?
That's
been a cloud over the team's head, and he's actually talked about it, right? Russell talked about it, right?
Yeah, he's talked about it, and it's just one of those moral dilemma things. I think if you're a sports fan, and we see it all the time, a guy has a horrible off the field thing, and some people simply think that a team should move on. The Cubs have decided that they're going to do everything possible and keep. Look, they made it sound like they're keeping Addison at a very high standard. They're putting him through a lot to make him to help him become a better person, and for them to see Addison Russell proving that he has changed and that the past is the past. But, keep in mind, he's still 28 games to serve of his 40-game suspension.
Right.
So he's not even going to be available the first month. It's just sort of a little bit different because the Cubs, it felt like they could do no wrong over the past, 4 or 5 years,
right,
other than a couple, I don't know, maybe pricing with tickets and things like that. But that always comes with winning. Other than that, it really, and I guess Aroldis Chapman kind of played into that, but
sure,
then they win the World Series and everybody forgets about it. But for the most part, it's been nothing but winning and good times with the Cubs. So it was just sort of a different start to spring training.
I agree.
That we'd kind of had sense before.
Yeah. All right. Also, you're covering your spring training notebook. You wrote, are the White Sox ready to win, ready to start winning? What was the feeling like when you were covering the Sox?
Well, there's a sense of urgency within the clubhouse, no question about it. I remember 3 years ago when I was there, you just didn't really feel it in the clubhouse. And then last year when the rebuild, you had all these young new players, these top prospects, and things were really picking up, and things didn't really go that well on the field last year. So I think for a lot of the players, Lucas Giolito was, he's one of their pitching prospects. He pitched last year. He's like, I'm done with losing. He's got tired of it. Ricky Renteria, the manager, says it's time to start having an urgency and start challenging everybody to start making the turn here a little bit. You know, this is year three of the rebuild. You had 62 wins last year. You better see some significant improvement on that.
Yeah.
There hasn't been any major, major upgrades this offseason, but it's another year under the belt for a lot of these guys. And you're going to see a couple of years. You're going to see Eloy Jimenez. Folks, when he's up to the plate this year, you're going to be watching it. I mean, the guy is just a monster. He's their top hitting prospect. He came over to the Sox in that deal with the Cubs, the Jose Quintana trade.
Oh, right.
Man, he puts on a show in batting practice. I mean, he draws a crowd just about every time he's out there hitting. So he'll probably be called up in late April, and do not miss many of his at bats because I haven't heard a single negative thing about him so far.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And so, of the two training camps, the more fun one was the White Sox.
Yeah, I mean, I think for the most part, the Machado thing kind of brought a dark cloud over it for a couple of days. Yeah. But you know, the Joe Maddon antics that we've seen are kind of gone. I think he's kind of moved on from that. I think the players are a little bit old. You know, they're kind of done with the magicians that Maddon used to bring in,
and the circus act he brings.
A little more. A little bit more business-like for the Cubs than maybe in the past few years.
Yeah.
But the Sox, you feel that youthful energy with all the young guys they have in the clubhouse.
Oh, there you go. All right. Well, you did a great job covering it, Kevin. Welcome back, and I'm sorry about the weather.
That's all right. We'll suffer together. Spring's right around the corner, Nick.
That's great
to talk to you, my man.
Okay, buddy. Take care.
All right, Nick. Thanks.
Very cool. The wonderful Kevin Powell. Love that guy. Sports reporter, anchor for WGN Radio. You can hear him every weekday afternoon on Rokan's show. And you can follow him on Twitter at kpowell720. His podcast is Powell at the Park on WGNRadio.com. And we talk to him usually about, you know, once a month, just to touch base and talk sports. Always fun to talk to Kevin Powell. We thank him for hanging out with us. All right, we're going to take a break, and we got the news coming up next.
Oh, she is my dear, my darling one. Her eyes so sparkling, full of fun. No other can match the likes of her. She is my dear, my darling one, my smiling and beguiling one. I love the ground she walks upon, my darling Irish girl.
All right. There you go. Wildcard Wednesday begins. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. Who requested that, and what was that for Wildcard Wednesday as we begin?
That request was from Kathy, and she requested Pretty Irish Girl by Sean Connery from Darby O'Gill and the Little People.
Wow. All right, there you go. All right, Wild Card Wednesday again. Any artist, any song, anything, get your requests in now. We'll play them later. The request lines are open at 312-981-7200. Also, we're going to jump into a conversation here about Spinal Tap, which, if you can believe it, is 35 years old this year, which makes me feel really, really old. And it has become, obviously, a comedy classic, it's a beloved comedy, and we were going to talk about Spinal Tap. I have a bunch of facts about Spinal Tap, but we're also going to talk about movies that make you laugh every single time you see them. You may know all the lines, you may know all the scenes, but you continue to laugh every single time you see them. Spinal Tap falls into that category for me. I still pretty much laugh out loud during all of Spinal Tap. And so that's what we're talking about, those kind of movies. But here are some facts about Spinal Tap. This is Spinal Tap. May not have invented the mockumentary genre, but it certainly popularized it. Rob Reiner's cult classic comedy, which starred Michael McKean, Christopher Guest, and Harry Shearer, turned the fictional heavy metal band of its title into bona fide musical superstars. It also called into question the exact dimensions of an onstage Stonehenge and what that should be. And here are some things you might not know about the film on its 35th on the 35th anniversary of its release. I remember the first time I saw Spinal Tap, the very first time. It was only playing in one theater. It was only here in Chicago when it opened. It was playing at the Fine Arts Theater, which no longer exists, in the Fine Arts Building on South Michigan Avenue. And it was like exclusively playing at the Fine Arts. And I went with my friend Joe. hey, listen, that guy. He and I went and just about lost it during the movie. Like, couldn't believe how funny it was. And we were happy to be there, and it was an immediate hit for us. We saw it a bunch of times in the theater, you know, repeatedly, and then of course when it came out on video, it was a movie that my friends and I would go to on a regular basis, and it's still that way. But the fact is that This Is Spinal Tap wasn't an immediate hit. Like Smell the Glove, the new album that the band was promoting in the film, This Is Spinal Tap didn't immediately find its audience. In preview screenings, some viewers complained about the camera work, offering up such feedback as, quote, too shaky, get a new cameraman, unquote. It wasn't until the film was released on home video that it truly found its audience. It has gone on to garner loads of critical acclaim. In 2011, Time Out London named This Is Spinal Tap the best comedy of all time, noting that it's sublimely funny and sharp, a comedy built for the long haul, which matures with each viewing. That's what they say in Time Out London, which named it the funniest comedy of all, the best comedy of all time. Entertainment Weekly, Empire, The New York Times, and the American Film Institute have all singled out the film on similar lists. So, yeah, it wasn't a big hit when it came out. I remember that not a lot of people, and again, it didn't get a giant release, at least here in Chicago. Like I said, it only played the Fine Arts, and I think maybe it did get a re-release into a few other theaters. But its initial release, it was under the radar. Nobody knew what it was. Nobody could really kind of figure out what Spinal Tap was. And to play it at the Fine Arts indicated that it was like an art film, because the Fine Arts Theater used to show art films and mostly foreign movies. So to have a Rob Reiner comedy play the Fine Arts was very unusual. And to have a Rob Reiner comedy just play in one theater was unusual. So just the release of the movie was very strange. And then it didn't. And the fact is absolutely true that it wasn't until home video that people started to watch it. And then people started to watch it over and over and over again. And it became the classic that it is now, that, you know, that many of us who love the movie can quote line after line after line from it and watch it over and over again. But it was not a big hit at all. And here's an interesting one. Next fact is that many viewers believed it was an actual documentary. Reiner thinks he knows the reason why it took so long for fans to come around to the film. Reiner told Newsweek in 2010, when Spinal Tap initially came out, everybody thought it was a real band. Everyone said, why would you make a movie about a band that no one's ever heard of? The reason it did go over everybody's head was that it was very close to the bone. This despite the fact that the credits state the band is fictional and that there is no Easter Bunny either. It's amazing to me that people would think that it's real. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe people who aren't familiar with, you know, because, I mean, maybe Christopher Guest wasn't the most recognizable guy in that cast. But Michael McKean, I mean, he's Lenny of Lenny and Squiggy. I mean, maybe because of the British accent and the long hair, people didn't recognize him. Harry Shearer was a regular on Saturday Night Live. I would think he's recognizable. And then there are cameos by people playing other people. Like, Howard Hessman is in the movie, and he's not playing Howard Hessman. And everybody knows who Howard Hessman is. So it just seems weird. Now, granted, it is remarkably accurate in terms of what a music documentary is. I mean, it's so beautifully done. I mean, so well put together in terms of what a documentary looks like and feels like, and it is incredibly authentic on that level, which is one of the reasons, one of the many, many reasons why it's so funny and why it has lasted so long, is because it really sticks close to the actual things that happen in music and rock documentaries. Here's the next fact: Ozzy Osbourne was one person who believed it was real. I love that. I absolutely love that. Ozzy Osbourne was among the audience members who assumed the band was real. When he learned the truth, he admitted that he should have known better. They seem quite tame compared to what we get up to, he once said. So their antics were a little bit tame. But Ozzy thought they were real. Oh, man. Next one is, it got an 8.0 rating on IMDb, and that's out of 11. So you get it? Out of 11. Ratings are a regular feature on the Internet Movie Database, with each title featuring a user-generated rating on the scale of 1 to 10. Well, almost every title. This is Spinal Tap had its own scale, and it goes to 11. Now, if you haven't seen Spinal Tap, you're probably not going to understand that, but there's a scene in the movie where Rob Reiner, who plays Marty DeBerge, the documentary filmmaker, is interviewing Christopher Guest, and he talks about how special his amplifiers are because they go to 11. And it's, I mean, it's one of the classic moments in the entire movie. Just so crazy. Let's see. Well, 262 area code just texted in. I was going to rate Spinal Tap as a 10, but I noticed that my rating could go up to 11. And people are starting to chime in about movies that they can watch and laugh every single time. And we're going to jump into that after I finish with these facts. So I'm going to hang on to these texts that are coming in, because the texts are coming in about movies that still make you laugh every time you sing, every single time you watch them. So I'll hang on to these, and we'll get to that after I finish with some of these facts about Spinal Tap. So yeah, if you go to IMDb and you want to rate it, they put the rating up to 11. That's pretty funny. It's pretty funny. So Ben, do you remember the first time you saw Spinal Tap?
Yeah, I want to say I was in college.
That's the perfect time to see it. I was, it was in 1984. I was 19 when I saw it. So that's the perfect age.
Okay.
And I'm a big...
I think I was the exact same age.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm a, obviously I'm a big music fan, and I especially like, I am a fan of hard rock, and I enjoy an occasional metal band. One of my favorite bands of all time is Black Sabbath, and first album I ever bought was a Black Sabbath album, and there's also a lot of Led Zeppelin in it too, in terms of the behavior of the band and the style of the documentary. Led Zeppelin made this really ridiculous movie called Song Remains the Same, which was also an album, a double album, a live album. And the movie that accompanied it, because it was footage from their tour from 1975, if I remember correctly. 75? Yeah. 74, 75. And so in addition to the live footage, you know, because they live performances in it. And I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, I haven't seen Song Remains the Same in a really, really long time. I think it was all filmed during the course of a 3 or 4 night stand at Madison Square Garden.
Oh.
And, okay. But then they added all this, like, weird storylines to it and fantasy elements to it. And it was just ridiculous. And a lot of that stuff is made fun of in Spinal Tap. A lot of that kind of, we take ourselves really very, very seriously. And, of course, the world of fantasy. Because, you know, the Zeppelin and a lot of other bands are, you know, were Tolkien freaks. And, you know, there's Lord of the Rings references in songs that aren't even about Middle Earth. And
yeah.
And it's absurd. And so all of the, you know, like the Stonehenge stuff that they do in the movie, and the sort of the fantasy element to it, that's all taken straight from bands like Zeppelin.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Okay, let's take a quick break. We got more great facts about Spinal Tap. Again, Spinal Tap is 35 years old, if you want to wrap your mind around that. But we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. More Spinal Tap facts. And then again, Spinal Tap is one of those movies that I laugh every single time I see it. And I've seen it a lot of times. And what are some of those for you? 312-981-7200 for talk and text.
Captain Ride, I'm on your mystery ship.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on your overnight radio till 5 a.m. It's Wild Card Wednesday. You hear me, Wild Card Wednesday? So get your requests in now. That's any artist, any song, anything. I'm trying to remember the name of the band that did this. Because it's Sky Blue or Blue. Is it Blue something?
Blue's Image.
Blue's Image. Okay. I knew Blue was in it. And that's Rod, Captain Rod. I used to love that song when I was a kid.
That's a great song.
It's a terrific song. Yeah, I just forgot. I knew Blue was in the title. So, anyway, that's Wild Card Wednesday. Who requested it?
That was Squat.
All right, Squat. Good old Squat. Hey, you know, the request lines are open. Get in here, man, and get your requests in. Any artist, any song, anything. Wild Card Wednesday. So, 312-981-7200. Also, that's Talk and Text line. For any time you want to jump in, we are talking about some really fun facts about Spinal Tap, which is 35 years old this year, which is insane. And that's going to lead us to talking about movies that we can watch over and over again and still laugh at. What movies do you still laugh at, even though you've seen them 100 times? Because Spinal Tap falls into that category for me. So here are some more Spinal Tap facts about the movie This Is Spinal Tap. We've been giving you some fun little facts about this movie. And here's the next little fact is Rob Reiner doesn't wear spandex well. Reiner had originally planned to play a fourth member of the band, but changed his mind when Harry Shearer reportedly told him that, quote unquote, he didn't look good in spandex. You know, I'm sure that we'll get to this later all these facts about Spinal Tap, that there's a lot of footage. They shot a lot of footage, and I know that that's one of the facts that we're going to get to. And there's also like a very, very long version of the movie that is available that has so much stuff that they had cut out. There's like a 3-hour version of Spinal Tap that you can get. Yeah. So let's talk first of all here to Chris on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Big fan. Thank you.
So, I'm half asleep, and I hear you talking about Spinal Tap, and I'm like, holy cow. When I was a kid in my 20s, I'm almost 50 now, I worked for Big Time Productions, and I was a local crew, and I got lucky, and I worked the show for the Break Like the Wind tour.
Oh, no kidding.
Oh, my God. And the funny, like, it was annoying. You got to show up at, like, 5 in the morning to load all this crap in and stage.
Yeah.
I can't remember if it was Riviera or Metro, but I think it was Riviera.
It was. I was there. It was the Riv. Yeah.
Riv. It was a great show.
Unbelievable show.
I'm a kid. And the sound check, Christopher Guest, Mike will come in, Harry Shearer come in, and they fight. Like, it's a sound check. There's nobody there. It's just crew. And they fight. And they go bicker back and forth, and they tell, "Hello, Cleveland." No, we're not in Cleveland. We're
oh wait,
we're
so they Detroit. Did.
No,
they did the whole act.
Yeah, they did the whole. They did
oh,
a bit
that's
for a sound check.
That's fantastic. So they had the British accents and everything.
Yeah, yeah. Hello, Cleveland. No. We're in Detroit. No, we're in Chicago. Oh, okay. Hello, Chicago.
That's hilarious.
It was amazing.
That's really cool. That's really, really cool.
It makes the experience of the movie and my experience with all those guys, and I got to meet them too after the show.
Yeah,
which is even more special. But kudos to you for talking about it because it is a cult classic.
Oh, absolutely. And again, you know, the other topic that we're going to be jumping into, Chris, is it clearly is one of those movies that I could watch over and over again and still laugh every time.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
and you find those little things that you forgot about
right.
every time you watch it again and again and again. Yeah, yeah.
That's a great story. That's a great story, Chris. Thanks, buddy.
All right, thank you, guys.
I love that they stayed in character during the sound check. That is hilarious. That they did an act just for the crew. That's awesome. I saw that tour, by the way, Break Like the Wind, and it was great. It was truly great. A whole bunch of us went. I used to work at a bar called Ginger's Ale House, and like the entire bar went, like patrons and like the entire staff. I'm surprised the bar was open, you know, while we were there.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, no, it was fantastic.
There's been a few bands I've seen that have done that where they come out in character. Bands that dress up for their acts.
Oh, I see.
Because one of the bands, have you ever heard of Here Come the Mummies?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I love those guys.
Yeah. but they'll come out because nobody can know who they really are because of their other contracts, et cetera. So it's always a riot.
I would love to see what a sound check for Gwar would be like. You know?
Yeah.
I've often told people, listen, I don't own any Gwar records. I don't have a Gwar album. I don't listen to Gwar at any leisure time in my life. Never have. But I tell everybody that I have met, you have to see Gwar at least one time in your life. You have to. It's a must. A friend of mine, it was my first wife and I were getting married, and as a wedding gift, someone got us a pair of tickets to Gwar. And I was like, what are we talking about? And the girl who gave it to us was like, no, trust me. Trust me. And I'm like, come on. And it was absolutely amazing. And we were up in the balcony, so we were out of the liquid range, you know, where you have to wear the splash zone.
Yeah.
Where all kinds of bodily fluids fly across the building. It's performance art, man, and they're theater geeks. Those, you know, we've lost like three members of Gwar now that passed away.
I believe that's right.
But we went, and I'd never seen anything like it. I swear to you, I've never seen anything like it. And it was, you know, the music was loud and crazy and stupid, but the performance on stage, the costumes, what they were doing, the tone of it. So theatrical, so insane, so over the top. And if you don't get liquid, if you don't get some sort of bodily fluid on you at a Gwar show, you didn't do it right. And we were even in the balcony and they got us. Gwar, I wonder if they're in character. I bet they are. I bet they come out in full costume when they do their sound checks. I would imagine.
I would think.
God, they're so great. Oh. Have you seen Gwar?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know this, but I used to work for Dury Nellies.
Right. Oh, they played Nellies?
They played, not while I was working there, but years prior.
No kidding. Yeah, so did they mess up Nellies? Did they have bodily fluid? That is fantastic. Wow, that'd be a hell of a place to see them.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, okay. Yeah,
it was a good show.
I saw them, I've seen them twice. I saw them both times at the Riv.
Okay.
All right, here's John. He's in Park Forest on WGN. Go ahead, John.
Yes, tying in with Spinal Tap and yesterday's discussion of John Candy. I didn't hear it yesterday. Did anyone mention a TV documentary for HBO called The Last Polka?
The Schmengis were mentioned, but specifically The Last Polka was not, but the Schmengis were.
It's a brilliant documentary.
Yeah.
I won't give it away, but when they do their tribute to Michael Jackson, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, no, I've seen The Last Polka. It's great, but you can't talk about John Candy and not talk about the Schmengi brothers. That's just, you can't do it.
Yeah.
So, okay. Hey, John, thanks, buddy. Take care. Yeah, The Last Polka, which is, you know, a takeoff on The Last Waltz, which is, you know, the documentary that Martin Scorsese, the rock documentary that Martin Scorsese made about the band and their final shows with an all-star lineup. That's really, you know, if you're talking rock and roll movies, that's a whole other subject that we can actually get to. Maybe we can do that sometime this week, too. Just get into, you know, like rock movies or concert movies or things like that. Because The Last Waltz is an exceptional concert movie. And I mean, obviously, Martin Scorsese, you know, is one of the greatest filmmakers ever, and he also is a big music fan and uses music in his movies better than, like, anybody. And he's made a few rock documentaries and concert movies. But I don't think none better than The Last Waltz, which just has an incredible line. Besides the band, it has such an all-star lineup of incredible musicians and performers. It's a great movie. But that was the takeoff that they were doing when they did The Last Polka. Takeoff on The Last Waltz. So, all right, let's take a break here. We got the news coming up. Then after the news, more facts about Spinal Tap and then movies that make you laugh every single time you watch them, no matter how many times you've seen them. All right, that's coming up after the news, which is next. We'll be right back. Wednesday, man. This is what happens on Wild Card Wednesday. All over the map. And TV show themes come up a lot. Wild Card Wednesday. You're my Wild Card Wednesday. Get your requests in now. Any artist, any song, anything. It's wild. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Get those in. Tell us who requested the Rocky and Bullwinkle theme.
That was from the 301 area code.
The 301 area code.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. It's such a great show, Rocky and Bullwinkle.
I was a Boris and Natasha fan myself.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just, you know, it was one of those shows that obviously was, you know, it was a kid show, it was a cartoon show, but there was so much stuff in there for adults, like the jokes and stuff, the references. Brilliant stuff. So, all right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number for your Wild Card Wednesday request, and also for your comments about Spinal Tap, if you want to join us to talk about Spinal Tap, which we're talking about now. It is the 35th anniversary of the release of Spinal Tap. Which is crazy. And we're talking about some fun facts about the movie. And Spinal Tap is one of those movies that a lot of people, including myself, watch it over and over again and still laugh. And that's what we're going to jump into. We've got people who are texting some of their favorite movies that they make them laugh even when they watch them over and over again. And then we'll jump into that after we finish off the facts about Spinal Tap. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for Talk and Text. All right, here's the next one. Any similarities between Black Sabbath... Any similarities to Black Sabbath are purely coincidental. In one of the film's most iconic moments, a miscommunication in measurements causes what is supposed to be a life-size version of Stonehenge to end up being small enough that it was in danger of being crushed by a dwarf, quote-unquote. A similar incident occurred on the Black Sabbath's Born Again tour in 1983, except their monument was too big to fit on the stage. Given that This Is Spinal Tap was released a year later, that Black Sabbath would have influenced the film seems logical, but the movie scene in question was actually filmed in 1982 as part of a 20-minute short the production team used to get the green light to the movie. So it seems like a similarity, but it's not. That's pretty funny. Black Sabbath on the Born Again tour. The film hit too close to home for many famous musicians. We do love that. The musicians who have said, man, I can't watch Spinal Tap. It's too much like my life, Harry Shearer said. In John Kenneth Muir's book, Best in Show, the films of Christopher Guest and Company. That's the highest compliment of all. It beats all the Oscar nominations we never got. It's a compliment that the movie's cast and crew hear quite often. Like, it's too real, man. I can't watch it. Robert Plant, Jimmy Page, Eddie Van Halen, Eddie Vedder, Dee Snider, they're just a few of the musicians who have referenced similarities between their own lives and the movie's plot. I can't remember what band it was. There was a band that was on the VH1 Behind the Musics. You know how they did, like... Those behind, I watched all of those. I watched every one of those Behind the Musics. I love those things, and every one of them is the same. You know what I mean? It starts out, they form the band, they find some success, they have struggles. It's alcoholism or something, or divorce or something, and then they have terrible times, and then they get back together, or everybody's happy at the end. And one of the bands, it was a band in the metal. The metal / hard rock genre, who were during their Behind the Music, like, don't even mention Spinal Tap. Don't mention Spinal Tap. It's too hard to even talk about. I can't even talk about it. They nailed it. These guys nailed exactly what it's like to be on the road and be a rock and roll, you know, star or not be a rock and roll star. So yeah, Spinal Tap. Here's an interesting fact. I had no idea about this. Some of these I already knew because I'm such a fan of the movie. But the movie, Spinal Tap, it made both Tom Waits and The Edge cry. Tom Waits once said that when he watched the film for the first time, he cried because of its realism. The Edge... shared a similar sentiment in 2005 when U2 was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He said, "It's so hard to keep things fresh and not become a parody of yourself," the legendary guitarist told the crowd of onlookers. "And if you've ever seen the movie Spinal Tap, you will know how easy it is to pair to parody What We All Do. The first time I saw it, I didn't laugh. I wept. I wept because I recognized so much and so many of those scenes. that is so funny. Let's see. Terry says, Nick, didn't Spinal Tap have a theatrical trailer which had nothing to do with the movie? It was like people rolling cheese or something like that. Yes, it did. It had a fake trailer. I can't remember the content of the trailer, but it did. Which maybe didn't help the, you know, the move to get people in the seats if they're showing fake trailers. 630 area code says, never saw it in the theater, but I did fool many of my friends with a fabulous VH tape of it. They still love it and laugh every time we watch it. Thanks, Nick. XOXO. Oh, Gossip Girl has written us a text this morning. 630 area code says, the deli tray. The deli tray scene. where Nigel is complaining, but he's complaining about the food on the deli tray. And then my baby wears mud flaps. the 6-3 area code says, I love that damn movie.
Yeah.
There's a lot to love about Spinal Tap. The next fact is something we mentioned earlier. Most of the dialogue was ad-libbed. Because the vast majority of the film was improvised, all four of the film's main stars, Reiner, McKeon, Guest, and Shearer, received equal billing on the script. Because all of the actors contributed to the script, the foursome lobbied the Writers Guild of America to give every member of the cast a writing credit, and that request was promptly denied. Could you imagine if the writing credits in that movie? Because there's like 150 people in that film. I didn't know that they requested. I didn't know that they requested for the Writers Guild to give. That's hilarious.
That's awesome.
Yeah, for the entire cast, they wanted the entire cast to get a writing credit. That's pretty great. And all that improvisation resulted in more than 100 hours of footage. Reiner managed to edit the film's original theatrical release down to 82 minutes, but fans of the film have very actively sought out the unedited footage. In 1998, the Criterion Collection released its only single-layer, double-sided disc that includes more than an hour of additional footage. It's now out of print, can be found on Amazon now, though you can find it for $250. I have one. I have that Criterion Collection at home. MGM's DVD features an additional 70 minutes of footage, but the Holy Grail is the alternate version, is the 4.5-hour bootleg edition, which I have. But unfortunately, I have it on VHS, and I have not transferred it over. But I have had Fever Pitch, the worst movie ever, transferred over. I've got to have my priorities. I've seen that long version of Spinal Tap. It's pretty crazy. A sloppy second subplot was removed. The film's original script included a fun subplot which explained why the band members are often seen with cold sores on their lips. All three of them had slept with the lead singer of their opening act, and she gave them all herpes. So they cut all that out. But you know, there are still moments in the movies where they have the cold sores all over their mouth. It still inspires a laugh. You know, they may have cut the subplot out and the explanation out, but it's still funny every time. The band is only now semi-fictional. Though Spinal Tap was created as a pure parody, the film's success has led to a legitimate music career for McKeon, Guest, and Shearer. In the 3 decades since the film's debut, the trio has released albums. They've done numerous interviews in character and performed in concert. Guest told The Wrap in 2013, "We played the Pyramid Stage. There were 130,000 people there," or something like that. Since the film released 30 years ago, we've gone on to tour playing Wembley, the Royal Albert Hall, Carnegie Hall. It's weird but great. The fiction became real. The film has a sort of sequel. Another fact. As part of the marketing campaign for their 1992 album Break Like the Wind, a made-for-television sequel to the original film, The Return of Spinal Tap, was released. In addition to concert footage from a show at the Royal Albert Hall, the 58-minute film featured an appearance by the Folksmen, a fictional folk music band that McKeon, Guest, and Shearer created in 84 for an episode of Saturday Night Live. They have subsequently opened in concert for Spinal Tap as the Folksmen. They were booed off the stage in New York City. So they opened for themselves as the folksman, and they actually fooled the audience into thinking that they were real guys and booed them off the stage. They also made an appearance in Guest's 2003 mockumentary, A Mighty Wind. Norwegians know the film as Help. We are in the pop business. That's the title of it. When This Is Spinal Tap was released on video in Norway in 1984, its title was translated to Help. We are in the pop business. This caused some Norwegian filmgoers to believe it was related to Airplane because of the exclamation points that had been released a few years earlier, which was called Help, We Are Flying. Help, We Are in the Pop Business. Help, We Are Flying. And then finally, the film will love on and on and on. In 2002, This Is Spinal Tap was selected for preservation by the National Film Registry, because it is a film that is considered, quote-unquote, culturally, historically, and aesthetically significant by the Library of Congress. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? Oh, man. So, 414 area code says, Nick, if you've never watched it with the commentary on... Oh, I have. If you've never watched it with the commentary on, you need to do so as soon as possible. They do the commentary in character as if they were talking about these things really happening. It's absolutely brilliant. It is brilliant. It's really fun. That Criterion Collection, I guess it's out of print if you want to spend $250 from Amazon. But I think the commentary is on the MGM release, which is available. But yeah, the commentary, they're totally in character during the commentary. It's hysterical. It's absolutely hysterical. So, all right. So there you go. 35 years ago, This Is Spinal Tap was released, and we're still watching it over and over again. We got some texts coming in at 312-981-7200, and if you want to call us, that's 312-981-7200. We are now talking, moving on to movies like Spinal Tap, which are the movies that make you laugh every single time you see them, and you've probably seen them many, many times. So which ones are those that fall into that sort of Spinal Tap category? 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We'll get to that topic right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're back. It's Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in now at 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, Wildcard Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. Explain what that was and who requested it.
That came from Peter from Decatur, who likes to contribute quite a bit on the show. And that was the theme song from the TV show The Saint.
The Saint with Roger Moore.
Yeah.
Yeah, classic show. And one of those pretty memorable TV theme songs as well. So, we were just talking about some facts about Spinal Tap. This Is Spinal Tap, which turns 35 years old this year. And it's one of those movies that I can watch over and over again and still laugh. Every single time I watch it, I laugh. And there are a bunch of movies that are like that, and that's what we're talking about. What are those movies that you go to that they make you laugh every single time you watch them? You don't tire of it. So we got some texts that came in, and we got some phone lines open and some text lines open, too. We want to hear about that. Movies that make you laugh every single time you watch them. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. 262 area code in the movie Eating Raoul. Oh, wow. There's an obscure one. A good one, too. I laugh at the adult toy store scene every time. Whenever someone asks what flavors I have, I always throw in trail mix. Eating Raoul. All right. 815 area code Stripes with Bill Murray. It makes me laugh just thinking about it. Yeah, that's another one. When we were talking about John Candy, because the other day was the 25th anniversary of John Candy's passing. Stripes got mentioned, you know, several times, obviously, because John Candy is so brilliantly funny in Stripes, and that is one of those movies that I can watch. a bunch of times, and I still laugh at it every time. It still cracks me up. 585 says, the scene in the movie It's a Mad, 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 Mad World with Jonathan Winters getting mad in the gas station when he has to ride a little girl's bike. I still crack up every time I see it. Yeah, he destroys that entire gas station. Jonathan Winters just completely destroys the gas station, and it's funny. It is very, very funny. So I would guess, you know, something like Tommy Boy is one of those movies for me. Tommy Boy is one of those movies that I crack up every time. Just there's stuff in that movie that makes me laugh every time I see it. It's a movie that has really become like a favorite. And so many really funny lines and so many really funny moments that no matter how many times I watch it, I still crack up every time. Animal House is another one. Animal House is a movie that makes me laugh every time I watch it. It's one of my favorite comedies of all time. The horse having a heart attack when they shoot the blanks, when Stephen first shoots the blank, the gun blank. It just cracks me up. When the guy is measuring the horse to chainsaw him out of Dean Wormer's office, that cracks me up. So many funny moments in that movie. And that's a movie that I've seen many, 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 many times. And I still laugh at it. The other one, as I've mentioned before, the Holy Trinity of comedies. We mentioned Animal House. We mentioned Stripes. And, of course, Caddyshack. Caddyshack is a movie that so many people of my generation, especially guys, know absolutely by heart. Like, we know every line from that movie, every exchange, every joke, and it's still funny. I mean, it's what's great is that cast is so unbelievable, and they're so funny. I mean, you Bill Murray, Chevy Chase, you got Rodney Dangerfield, and so many really brilliantly funny people. But for me, the funniest performance in that movie is Ted Knight. I still think Ted Knight's just the funniest thing in that movie. And yeah, but that's another one of those movies that has, you know, repeat viewings that you just crack up every time you see him, every single time. But yeah, but again, Ted Knight, I just love that performance so much in that movie. I just think he's so unbelievably funny as Judge Smales. I think it's a legendary comedic performance, like one of my favorite comedic performances of all time. And it's funny every time. Every time he does the stuff that I've seen him do hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times, I still crack up. Spalding, get your foot off the boat. You'll get nothing and like it. The world needs ditch diggers too. All of that stuff. Oh, Billy, 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 Billy Baru. I mean, classic. Classic. I remember when that movie first came out. It came out in 1980. I was 15 years old. And I think I saw it, you know, like in a month. I think I saw it like five times in a month. I would just go back and see it. And the theater that I saw it at the most, because I grew up right next door to the L, Addison, the Brown Line stop. It was the Ravenswood train at that time. But I lived right next to the house, the greenhouse right next to the Addison Brown Line stop is the house I grew up in, second floor apartment. That's where I grew up. And so I would just jump on the train and go down to Water Tower. Water Tower Place had movie theaters, and that was probably the movie theater I frequented the most, especially in the early 80s. And I saw Caddyshack there. I can't tell you the number of times I saw Caddyshack there. So yeah, but those are the ones that I watch a lot. Used Cars is another one. Used Cars, which is my favorite comedy of all time. I think it's the funniest movie ever made, and and I know every line of dialogue to that, and I still crack up, you know. Just this past summer, during my film club events, I held an entire summer screening movies directed by Robert Zemeckis. And one of them was Used Cars. We showed Used Cars, and, you know, my folks and I saw that movie when it first came out. Again, that was also 1980, same year as Caddyshack. The first time that when we saw that movie, I saw it with my folks. We were at the Lincoln Village Theater. Again, I'll never forget it because I had not laughed that hard at a movie, you know, well, since Airplane, which was, you know, that came out, I guess it was a week before or a couple of weeks before. That was a good summer for comedy, 1980. Good summer for comedy. You got Airplane, you got Caddyshack, and you got Used Cars. And of course, the only one that wasn't a hit was Used Cars. But yeah, that's one I can watch, you know, endlessly and just still laugh. And that's it's weird because you know everything coming, you know every joke, and you still laugh. That's like the Honeymooners, man. Like I mentioned before, the original 39 episodes of the Honeymooners, I've seen them. I can't even tell you how many times I've seen them, and I know every line of dialogue, and I still crack up. I think it's just the best. So, but a lot of these, you know, some of these movies that you watch over and over again, you have kind of an emotional attachment to them, or at least I do, and that may sound corny or stupid, but I do have kind of an emotional attachment to a lot of these movies that I watch over and over again, even the comedies, even the stuff that just makes me laugh. Ben, what are a couple of movies that make you laugh every single time you watch them?
Blazing Saddles.
Oh, man, yeah.
Yeah. This one's one of those 90s gems, but PCU with Jeremy Piven.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one gets me every time.
PCU is that's a pretty underrated movie.
I agree.
I used to hang out with Jeremy Piven and John Cusack. We were like from like summer of 89 to about middle of the beginning of 92. We hung out all the time. He had a theater company. John had a theater company, and Jeremy Piven was one of them. They were roommates. They lived together in a loft in Old Town.
Oh, wow.
And we used to hang out in a bar called O'Rourke's, legendary yeah. bar that used to be in Old Town, and then they moved across the street from the Steppenwolf. Now they're closed, but it was one of the greatest bars ever. We used to hang out there all the time, and it was fun. And then it got to the point where, like, both of them kind of, like you know, like, John moved away from Chicago for a good period of time. And then right around that time is when Piven became a jerk. Because he came to town to promote PCU, and he was a different dude. He was an entirely different dude. So, okay, yeah, PCU, surprisingly funny movie. Okay, we'll take a break, and we want to talk about movies that make you laugh even when you see them all over and over again. And that's coming up here on 720 WGN. The news is up after this.
Has anybody here seen my old friend John? Tell me where he's gone. He freed a lot of people, but it seems the good die young. Right. I just looked around.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. It's Wild Card Wednesday. You hear me, Wild Card Wednesday? Get your requests in, 312-981-7200. Any artist, any song, anything, get those requests coming in. Okay, Ben, who requested that, and what was it?
That one was from Trucker Rich, and that was Moms Mabley Abraham performing Martin and John.
Moms Mabley.
Yep.
Yeah, legendary. Very unique choice. Thank you, Trucker Rich. 312-981-7200. We were talking about some facts about Spinal Tap, which is a movie that a lot of people can watch over and over again, and they laugh every time, and that's what we're talking about. We want to hear from you. Phone lines are open. Text lines are open. Movies that make you laugh every single time you see them. 312-981-7200. Vic, do you have any movies that you can watch and you'll laugh every time?
I came up with a couple.
Okay, please.
All right, so Weird Science is one. Really a lot of movies from the 80s with Anthony Michael Hall. I thought he was hilarious mm-hmm. when I was growing up, including in, and I know this was probably not a very good movie, but Made Me Laugh, Johnny Be Good.
Here's the thing about that movie.
I'm sure you love that one.
It's a terrible movie. But
yeah,
here's,
I know.
Here's the thing about Johnny Be Good, though.
But it's not necessarily Anthony Michael Hall that I liked in that movie. It was Robert Downey Jr. But go ahead.
Well, sure. Yeah. The thing about Johnny Be Good is that it's clearly a terrible movie.
Mm-hmm.
But every time it's on cable, I watch it.
Really?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah. If I'm not mistaken, I think it was Uma Thurman's first movie.
Oh, was it?
I think so.
I think you're right.
It's close to her first. I'd never seen her before, and I was
right.
Like, ooh.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, but Downey Jr. in that one, I think he's hilarious in that one. Three Amigos is another one that still makes me laugh today, right?
Oh, man, Three Amigos. Yeah, no, Three Amigos is funny as hell. That's a good one. That's one of those sort of classic, mm-hmm. you know, mid to late 80s comedies. John Landis directed that. He directed a lot of those. You know, it's another one that that came out around the same time, I think a year, maybe a year after, which is Spies Like Us. With Chevy Chase Dan Aykroyd. That movie is hilarious. Well,
that's another one that totally would make me laugh.
Yeah, that's on my list too.
Three Amigos. God, I haven't seen Three Amigos in a long time.
Three Amigos will make me laugh today. And you know what else? It still makes me laugh today is Raising Arizona. Still hilarious to me. And there are movies that don't make me laugh anymore that used to. One in particular that I thought of this morning because you're doing this topic.
Yeah.
For me, Strange Brew, I loved it when I was younger. It cracked me up. I tried to watch it recently. It really didn't do it for me.
Right?
Yeah.
I still love Strange Brew. Yeah. No,
Parts that still will get me.
I love Bob and Doug McKenzie.
Yeah, I didn't find it very interesting anymore.
Geez, somebody horked her clothes.
Oh, my gosh. Don't get me started. You know, that's one of the ones that my brother and I, we can almost quote every line.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I think, somebody horked her clothes. That might be my favorite. That might be my favorite line in the entire movie.
Yeah, I mean, it was quotable me anyway with my circle of friends.
Well, that's the thing about, first of all, those characters were so great on SCTV, Bob and Doug.
Yeah.
Man. They were so great on SCTV. And then the album came out, the comedy album came out, where they had Take Off to the Great White North, the song Take Off, and they had Geddy Lee sing it because, of course, he's in Rush, which is the biggest Canadian band ever. And I remember they had a bit on there because it was a regular sort of comedy album. And I was in high school when that came out, and when all of that stuff was really popular, when Bob and Doug took off, that covered my high school year. So I was the absolute right age, to get into Bob and Doug.
Yeah.
They had a bit on the comedy. Did you ever listen to the comedy album?
No, I'm hearing all this for the first time.
Oh no, it's great. And the song Take Off was actually a hit.
Oh.
It was actually a hit. Geddy Lee. It's them talking and singing, and then Geddy Lee comes in and sings the chorus. But anyway, there are a bunch of different comedy cuts and bits on the album. One of which I remember, which was one of the funniest ever, was they had a cut on the album of it called the Beer Hunter. Now, have you seen the movie The Deer Hunter?
The Deer Hunter?
Yeah, Robert De Niro.
Sure, sure.
Okay. So in the movie The Deer Hunter, Russian roulette is a major part of the movie where, they're POWs and they're forced to play Russian roulette, which is a major part of the movie. So in this cut that they do, that Bob and Doug McKenzie do, it's called The Beer Hunter, and what they do is they take a six-pack of beer and someone shakes one of the cans of beer, shakes the hell out of it, and then they put the beer in like a bag, and you had to reach in and then open the beer next to your head. And whoever got the beer that was shaken up, that's like the, so that's why it was called the Beer Hunter.
Right.
And I just remember that bit. Oh, I remember listening to that bit like over and over again and just laughing my ass off. But yeah, no, Strange Brew, I still think that's funny. I'm still with that one. But yeah, God, I haven't seen Three Amigos in a long time. That's something I got to bust out again. That movie cracks me up. One of my favorite moments in that movie. Because all three of them are hilarious.
Yeah,
in it, Steve Martin, Chevy Chase, Martin Short.
Oh, Martin Short!
Martin
man,
Short,
though.
So funny in it. So like the wind, old lady. My favorite moment is when they walk into the bar when they first get there, and they walk into the bar and they take a shot of tequila.
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about, and then they just go. And they do the each one poses,
You know what? Another great part for me, a funny part is with the chapstick scene on the.
Oh my god! Oh my god! When it, like he just throws the canteen down and then all the water just starts pouring.
Right. I'm not a big Chevy Chase fan, but I thought his facial expression, him and Steve Martin in that scene, just.
Yeah, no, that was that's a funny movie, man.
Would you say that movie has a plethora?
Yes, I would. So, now that's a really funny movie. God, I haven't seen that one in such a long time. Oh, wait a minute. Was it the invisible
swordsman?
The invisible
swordsman. Oh yeah.
And the singing bush, right?
Yeah. The singing bush. Oh man, those are great.
God, that movie's so funny, good. Man. It's been too long since I've seen it. Now all this stuff is coming back. You mentioned the movie. hadn't really thought about the Three Amigos in a long time, but as soon as you see the Invisible Swordsman, like they shoot the Invisible Swordsman.
How about that scene where he's, I think it's Martin Short? Was it Martin Short coming out of the window on that rope? And
yeah.
He, as he's swinging, it's going to be, you know, the anticipation. Yeah. And then he just, the rope was a little too long.
Yeah. And he, boom. Yeah. Oh, funny movie, man. Oh, that's funny. Here are some texts here. 773 area codes. The movie I laugh at all the time is Dudley Moore in 10. That is a great movie. That, for my money, the best and most accurate movie about turning 40 ever made. One of the best movies ever made about a middle age crisis that men sometimes go through. I adore that movie. I absolutely adore it. 724 area code's got a few. Stir Crazy with Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder. The Blues Brothers, It's a Mad, 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 Mad World and Coming to America. I know a lot of people who love Coming to America who have watched that thing like a million times. My favorite part of that movie is the sexual chocolate. When Eddie Murphy comes out, I can't remember the character's name, but the band is Sexual Chocolate.
Do not. You have to talk about something else before we go to news in 15 minutes because you're going to get me started here.
I'm sorry. I'm taking you away from your work. All right. Here's Don and Joliet on WGN. Hey, Don.
Yes. How you doing, Nick?
Good.
Good. The movie I watch it over and over and laugh, probably my number one of all time, is One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
The scene where he takes all those nuts fishing.
Yeah.
He busts everybody out of the nut house and he shows up at the marina and he says, "I'm Dr. McMurphy and this is Dr. Cheswick.
Yeah.
This is Dr. Martini."
Yeah.
And they're fishing and they eventually show the boat just going around in circles.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
And then the other one, after repeated tries, Nurse Ratched won't allow him to watch the World Series. He starts making fun and just pretending the World Series is on the TV and there's just a blank screen
right.
And he's announcing the World Series
right.
And everybody's just cracking up and going nuts. And at one point he says, he's talking about Sandy Koufax and he says, somebody give me an effing weenie before I die.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
And then the scene where he and Chief are going back in for, they got in some trouble and he's sitting next to Chief and he says, Chief can't speak, of course, can't hear, and
right.
can't speak.
Right.
Chief gives him a stick of gum, and Chief says, "Thank you."
Right. Nicholson loses his mind at that point that he's been faking it the whole time.
Yeah, he's like, "You can talk and hear, you son of a bee." He said. And then when they're playing early in the movie,
basketball.
Blackjack.
Basketball.
No, they're playing blackjack.
Oh, blackjack.
Martini's got.
Oh yeah, hit me.
Hit me. And then of course the basketball scene.
It's a legendary movie. It is. It is a great one. All right,
fantastic.
Great. Don, thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Nick. Peace.
That's one of those movies that's a lot different than the book. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. The book is told from the point of view of the silent Indian. And it's complete it's a terrific book and a great movie. Well, here's Dave on WGN. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Nick, I just wanted to mention Screwed because my wife and I quote that movie to each other all the time, especially the Who Cares.
Who cares?
Yes. And right before, and in the very beginning when she asked Norm MacDonald if he expects her to go to her meeting like this, and the reaction of Norm MacDonald gets me every time. He's, oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll tell you something, man. The Elaine Stritch is hilarious in that movie. She's absolutely hilarious. And who cares? That's one of my favorite line. That's one of my favorite line readings in the history. Wait, here, listen closely, Dave. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Who cares?
There it is.
And then I also have to mention, I absolutely love kind of obscure movies that no one really knows about, and Let's Go to Prison is hilarious from the front to the end.
Yeah, you know, I've only seen it the one time. I've only seen it the one time.
If you rewatch it, not on Comedy Central, and you watch the actual version, it is a much different movie.
Yeah.
And what's special about that movie is that I spent a few years living in Joliet, and I can pinpoint 80% of the spots that they filmed.
Ah, okay. All right, cool.
Yeah, so it's cool. But, yep, all right.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Yep.
Take care. So you know that in the script that Elaine Stritch got, the line just said, "Who cares?" And she did this.
Who cares?
It's one of my favorite line readings in the history of movies. All right, we got a break here, and we'll come back. We got a ton of texts on this one. You guys can watch comedies over and over again and still laugh at them. I like that about you. So movies that make you laugh every single time you watch them. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Wednesday morning, Wildcard Wednesday. You're my Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200. And it's any artist, any song, anything. Who requested that and what was that?
That was System of the Down with Aerials. And that came from Paul up in Waukesha.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we were talking about on the 35th anniversary of the release of Spinal Tap. We were talking about that movie and talking about some of the facts about it. And that's one of those movies that I could watch a bunch of times and still laugh. So we're talking about movies that you watch, and every single time you watch them, you laugh. And we got a ton of texts coming in. The phone lines are open, too, if you want to jump in. It's 312-981-7200. 301 area code says, movies that make me laugh every time. Office Space, Kentucky Fried Movie, which is a great movie. The Zucker Brothers and Jim Abrams wrote that movie. John Landis directed it. And it pretty much set the tone for what the Zuckers and what ZAZ would do as they continued on. And then, of course, the next one on 301 area code list is Airplane, which, of course, is the Zucker Brothers. And then Blazing Saddles, which has been mentioned a couple of times this morning. 765 area code says Monty Python's Life of Brian. It's my favorite Python movie. Life of Brian is my favorite Python movie. I know a lot of people, you know, a lot of people say Holy Grail, and Holy Grail is great. It's absolutely great, but I'm a Life of Brian guy. National Lampoon's Vacation, Up in Smoke. Oh God, Up in Smoke. Jeez, the thing about Up in Smoke, which is fascinating to me, is I don't know if they were like truly high when they made that movie, like every shot of that movie. But if they weren't, then they captured that perfectly in the movie, like perfectly. But to me, it just seems like you can't really make a movie if you're blowing weed. You can't function or actually make a movie. And they captured that perfectly. Another vote for Blazing Saddles and Airplane, and then, of course, The Naked Gun. Now, here's the thing about the Naked Gun movies. Naked Gun movies are great, they're awesome, especially the first one. But they're not as funny as the TV series Police Squad. Police Squad, which The Naked Gun is based on from the files of Police Squad. Police Squad was this show that was on ABC in 1982, and it only lasted six episodes. They only made six episodes of it, and it got yanked because no one was watching it. And as funny as the Naked Gun movies are, the TV show that it's based on, Police Squad, is funnier, like a lot funnier. Really brilliant, one of the funniest shows that has ever been on TV. And they did a nice job with the movies, but still. 262 area code. The first time I saw Jackass, I almost peed my pants. Me too. That Jackass is one of the funniest movies I've ever seen in my life. I love all the Jackass movies. I got every episode of Jackass on DVD. I got the whole big boxed set. I love Jackass. I love everything about it. Those guys, I love those guys. And my favorite, and seriously, there's stuff in the original Jackass movie that is just like you cry laughing because it's so funny. That's absolutely the case for all of the Jackass movies. But I'm telling you, to me, the whole, first of all, with Bam, beating up his dad all day. That is just when he's sitting on the toilet and Bam comes in and just starts punching him. Phil Margera. But my favorite thing in the whole movie is when they load up the parents' bedroom with fireworks, and then they set off the fireworks at like 3:30 in the morning. The funniest part of that, first of all, it's hysterical. I mean, like real fireworks, not a little, not like one or two firecrackers. Like they load up that room with fireworks, and so the fireworks go off, and they wake up. And the best part is they actually have a camera outside. They cut to the outside, so you see the lights and stuff in the window. You see the fireworks going off. It's my favorite part. And then they top it. And then Bam tops it because they're waiting outside for his dad to go to work. And he gets in the van, and they fill the van full of fireworks. I'm telling you, I was, man, I remember my friend Mike View was like, I don't want to watch this stupid reality show crap. And I'm like, look, come on, let's go. And I had to convince him. And we went to Bruin View, which is the perfect place to see Jackass. And so we go to Bruin View, and I had to convince him. And I was like, look, if you don't like it, Mike, if you don't like it, I will pay your admission. Okay? I will pay your admission. And I'll buy you some beer during the movie, you know, because I'm telling you, this movie's hilarious. And he was way down on the whole reality show, MTV stuff, just like negative completely on it. And the double bill, this was the double bill. Check this out. It was Jackass was first, and then Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. That was the second movie.
Oh, man, that's like, a great,
unbelievable double great bill. And so Mike, about 20 minutes into Jackass, he leans over to me and he goes, "This is the funniest damn movie I've ever seen in my life." and since has become like a massive Jackass fan.
I gotta agree with you. Anything they did to parents,
oh my god!
Just for fun, just to mess with my mom, well, I like told her watch this and showed her the gator scene.
The gator scene is amazing. I'll tell you though, the guy who started it all is one of my favorites. Is Tom Green. Tom Green's show was unbelievable. The stuff that he did to his parents, the stunts that he pulled. Tom Green was the real innovator there. Like he was pre Jackass, and I love Tom Green. I'm a huge fan of his. You know, and yeah, I've gotten to know him too, which is really kind of amazing. And I love Freddy Got Fingered. I'm like the only person in the world that I love that movie. So, all right, we'll take a break. We'll wrap up with a whole bunch of texts here. Movies that you could watch over and over again and still laugh at. 312-981-7200 right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. And, Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Wild Card Wednesday. You remember Wild Card Wednesday? That's any artist, any song, any thing. And Ben, who requested some REO Speedwagon?
John from Decatur.
John from Decatur. All right, John, there you go. We are back, and we've been talking about movies that make you laugh every single time you see them, even if you see them over and over and over again. And that all started because it's the 35th anniversary of Spinal Tap, and we told you all kinds of fun facts about that movie a little bit earlier on, and the fact that it's 35 years old just freaks me out. And Spinal Tap is certainly one of those movies that falls into that category for a lot of people, including me. And we have a ton of texts here. And by the way, a little bit later on, we're going to talk about shocking TV finales. We'll have some fun with that, too. But if you guys want to jump in here now with movies that make you laugh every single time you see them, no matter how many times you see them, 312-981-7200. 708 area code says Slapshot and Young Frankenstein, both great choices. God, I love Slapshot. Oh, my God, do I love Slapshot. I had Slapshot a couple of months ago at my film club. I screened Slapshot, and we had a really good crowd, and some people had never seen it before. I love that movie. I really do. And it's all, you know, I mean, you know, and hockey is like my favorite sport. So, and that's just kind of like it's by far the best hockey movie ever made. It's also one of the funniest movies of all time. Vic, have you seen Slapshot? With Paul Newman and the Hanson brothers?
Yeah, no, have not.
It's so good, man. If you ever get a chance, if you're ever thinking about a movie to watch.
I just got to figure out where to get it without having to leave my apartment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I could bring in a DVD of it.
Yeah, I would watch it.
Oh, cool. All right, I'll do really that then for sure. I would love you to see it. And I forced Esmeralda to watch it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll do some homework. I'll do some homework, sure.
When Esmeralda was still on the show, she's like, I've never seen Slapshot. And I'm like, what? So I brought a copy of it in. She watched it and thought it was hilarious. So 807 area code says, one movie that gets to me is Monty Python and the Holy Grail. This is Canadian Bill, by the way. The scene that gets me is when the prince who is in the castle and the guards are guarding him get to me every single time. Lots of funny stuff in Holy Grail. 773 area code. I'm in tears from laughing every time I watch Dirty Work with Norm MacDonald. A lot of love for Norm MacDonald this morning, which is cool. Because Norm's great. Norm MacDonald rules. Dirty Work, my favorite part of Dirty Work is Don Rickles' cameo. where he just basically insults everybody. Well, that's what what else did Don Rickles do? Don Rickles insults people. That's what he does. But he called Artie Lang, look at you. Look at you, you baby gorilla. How about this? Mike from Novak Construction here. Hey, Mike, how are you, buddy? Any Peter Sellers Pink Panther movie always makes me laugh. My favorite one. Those Pink Panther movies are hilarious. My favorite one though is the Pink Panther Strikes Back, or the Pink Panther Strikes Again. I can't remember. It's a Pink Panther Strikes Again. That's my favorite one because it's got so many classic bits in it. You must be the beekeeper when he's got the mace stuck on his hand and he slams the beekeeper in the face. That's a priceless Steinway, not anymore. All of that, I mean, that is just the whole parallel bars thing where he's doing the parallel bars and he ends up falling down the stairs. And Peter Sellers was so brilliant in those movies, and his physical comedy was magnificent in those movies. 630 area code says, Nacho Libre is one of those movies that cracks me up every time I see it. Everybody hates that movie, Nacho Libre, with Jack Black, about the Mexican wrestling, about the Lucha Libres. Nacho Libre, I think that movie's hilarious. I think that movie is absolutely hilarious. But it got terrible reviews. And anybody I know, like friends of mine, they're like, what the hell is wrong with you? They hate that movie. I think it's hilarious. My favorite part of the movie is when the dude who played Pedro Napoleon Dynamite is in it. He plays like the cohort sidekick to Jack Black. And when he tries to give Jack Black an ear of Mexican corn. Get that corn out of my face. That's my favorite line in the movie. Get that corn out of my face.
You know, for a whole month, his infamous Nacho call was my text tone.
I thought that movie was funny, man.
I agree.
I did. 331 area code says, every time I watch Spaceballs and Caddyshack, I laugh every time. Those are hilarious movies. 608 area code says, the film that makes me laugh every time I see it, and it's almost perfect, is Rob Reiner's The Princess Bride, especially the scene with Cary Elwes, Wallace Shawn, and Billy Crystal and Carol Kane. 574 area code says, Mrs. Doubtfire with Robin Williams at his best. Oh, God, I hated that movie. Oh, my God, did I hate that movie. 262 area code, Army of Darkness makes me laugh every time, and I can't wait for Flashback Weekend. Yeah, that's right. Flashback Weekend is going to kick ass this year. Bruce Campbell's coming back. Army of Darkness is hilarious. It's great. But Sam Raimi is going to be there, too, at Flashback. So one of many, some really amazing. They just announced Lance Hendrickson is going to be there too. So it's going to be, it's an incredible lineup this year. Mike Kurz and Mia Kurz have done an unbelievable job. It's not done yet. We're only in March. And they will keep announcing guests all the way up until August when the weekend, flashback weekend happens. And also, on top of all these great guests, Robert Englund's going to be there, and Tony Todd, Virginia Madsen, both from Candyman. And just tons of other people, including, you know, Ted Raimi, Sam Raimi, Bruce Campbell. They're all going to be there. They're all going to be there live. And on top of that, we will celebrate that weekend. We will celebrate the 40th anniversary of Svengoolie, because Rich always comes out on Saturday afternoon, and he hosts the costume contest every year at the convention. But we're going to do a special 40th anniversary party for Rich, 40th anniversary of Svengoolie. It's going to be great. Hold on a second. Now let's go to Glenn on WGN. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, good morning, Nick. How are you doing?
Good.
Well, anything by Mel Brooks, of course.
Yeah.
Well, maybe almost anything. But Kung Fu Hustle.
Oh, such a great movie.
I saw that. Oh, my God. That was so friggin' hysterical.
Such a great movie. And not only is it hilarious, which it is, but, man, the fight scenes in that movie are so amazing.
I know. The best part, I know. It's just like there's a lot of choreography.
Yeah.
Choreography?
Yeah.
That's not even a word.
Choreography.
yeah. And the running scene and then him getting stabbed with a knife.
Absolutely.
It's hysterical.
I saw that movie twice in 3 days. It was playing at the Landmark Century at Clark and DeVersey, My ex and I went to go see it. We loved it so much we went back 2 days later and saw it again.
And I hear they're coming out with a Kung Fu Hustle 2.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the
but main, I'm not sure.
The star of that movie, who also, you know, wrote and directed it, and I'm blanking
right.
out, and I can't believe I'm blanking on his name right now, but the Kung Fu Hustle guy who created it, writer, director, and star of the movie, he's made a ton of movies. He's like, he's very prolific. He writes, directs, and stars in a bunch of stuff, and they've been waiting on a Kung Fu Hustle sequel for a long time. I mean, that movie's like 10 years old, 10, 11 years old.
Yeah, it's so, just hysterical.
It's a great movie. All right, Glenn, thank you, buddy.
All right, thank you.
Take care. Yeah.
That was Stephen Chow.
That's it, Stephen Chow.
That's yeah.
It's so amazing.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. I cannot wait for a sequel.
Oh, Kung Fu Hustle is just an unbelievable movie. It was really unbelievable. 312 area code says, Men at Work, one of the most underrated and underseen movies written and directed by Emilio Estevez. It's genius. Good luck trying to find it on DVD. Come on, Men at Work. 262 area code, The Odd Couple. Oh, that's, yeah. Yeah. The Odd Couple is one of those that I can't count the number of times I've seen The Odd Couple. I love that movie. I think Matthau and Lemon are just absolutely brilliant in that movie. It's such a funny movie. Oh, good. Our guests are here. I'll go get a saw to cut the meat. It's one of my favorite lines. Oh, man. Here's Robert on WGN. Hi, Robert.
Hey, what's going on today? Hey, I remember we used to, back in the late 80s and stuff, we used to get together and watch Yellowbeard.
Oh, wow.
Just, we'd watch it about once a month in the garage, have some beers, buddies come over. Madeline Kahn.
Yeah.
Marty Feldman passes away during the making of the movie.
Right.
John Cleese, you know, just... It was just awesome. We just couldn't get enough of it, actually.
Yeah, no, it's a great cast.
Hard to find.
I haven't seen Yellowbeard in years. I mean, a lot of years. So
I had one of my daughter's boyfriends actually got me a copy of it, and I loaned it to a buddy of mine that we used to watch it all together all the time, and I haven't seen it since.
Yeah, oh, somebody stole it, huh?
Yeah. He was sitting down with his son watching it.
Well, I see. I got it. Passing it down to a new generation. All right. Robert, thanks, my friend. See ya. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Steel Magnolias has so many funny lines and scenes in it. This is from Shaughnessy. Lots of laughter through the tears. Go ahead and hit her. We'll sell T-shirts. I'll hit Weezer Burdrow. I've only seen Steel Magnolias once. That was kind of enough. 262 area code, Better Off Dead. That's a funny movie. Let's see. From Paul, can't forget Dumb and Dumber. So funny. Yes, Dumb and Dumber is hilarious. But my favorite Farrelly Brothers movie is Kingpin. Kingpin is my favorite of all of them, with Woody Harrelson, Randy Quaid, and a brilliantly funny Bill Murray. Bill Murray is unbelievably funny in Kingpin. There aren't a ton of bowling movies that have been made, but that's the best bowling movie of all time. As though it's not, I mean, it's not a massive subgenre, but it's the best bowling movie of all time. So, okay. Movies that still make you laugh every time you see them. We still got a bunch of texts that we'll get through. And then after 4 o'clock, we're going to talk about shocking TV finales right here on WGN. But we got a break here. We got a weather forecast for you from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. To today, partly sunny, sunny skies and a high near 30. Tomorrow, cloudy, chance of some snow in the south. High temperatures between 25 and 30. For Friday, lingering flurries early on, followed by a decrease in clouds and temperatures climbing to freezing, above freezing. Saturday, a thickening clouds with rain, possible thunderstorms, highs approaching 50. And for Sunday, windy and colder, rain changing to snow showers. It's never going to end, man. It's never going to end. Sunday, snow showers. Come on, man. Right now, it's 10 degrees at O'Hare. It's 11 degrees at Midway and 11 degrees at the lakefront. This weather sucks. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll wrap up the topic of movies that you can watch over and over again and are still funny right here on 720 WGN.
Let me be your hawk. Let me be your hawk now. Baby, 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 baby.
Okay, good. There you go. Welcome back. Everybody, Wild Card Wednesday continuing. Yeah, man. 312-981-7200 for talk and text and for Wild Card Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything. Who requested that and explain?
That was from the 815 area code, and that was Let Me Be Your Hog by Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah. There you go. Weird Al.
And speaking of, we just had a texter for funny movies you can watch over and over. And
UHF.
I'll agree with them. UHF.
Yeah, that's a classic. Yep. That's a movie that, that's another one of these movies that that bombed at the box office when it first came out, like completely bombed. But now it's got like a huge cult following.
Yeah, it had to go up against what, Batman and
it was 1989.
Yeah, some big ones, yeah.
And that's a by the way, a pre-Seinfeld Michael Richards in that movie.
You know, you were talking about the commentary on Spinal Tap earlier. Have you ever listen to the commentary on UHF?
No, I haven't.
It is phenomenal.
Is it?
Richard shows up in there. It's Jay Levy, Weird Al.
Yeah.
Pretty much all the main characters that they know, like, just show up, like, in
that's
out
pretty
the
cool.
whole thing and talk
that's pretty
things.
Funny. Hey, Nick and Ben, this is from Squat, who says, among the many movies you mentioned, I've laughed repeatedly at also, but the one that stands out, I almost hate to say it, is The Aristocrats. I rented this movie way back when and thought my dad would like to watch a movie. He was up in age by then, and I didn't know anything about the movie except that it was about, quote-unquote, the greatest joke of all time. I couldn't turn it off fast enough. It was like watching a movie with my parents when I was young and a boob popped out. Talk about a role reversal. The whole movie made my cheeks hurt. When it got to Gilbert Gottfried, I almost crapped myself. Thanks a bunch. Yeah, that's a pretty great movie. Yeah, The Aristocrats. 224 area code, Midnight Run. That's a movie. That one falls into my remote dropper category. It's like right near the top. Midnight Run, I could watch that movie anytime, anywhere, any place. I love that movie. 608 area code says Captain Ron. Captain Ron. it's not the best movie Kurt Russell made wearing an eye patch. He made it. Made another one that was a little bit better. 630 area code says, the movie Night Shift cracks me up. That's Scott from Streamwood. Yeah, Michael Keaton is great in that. Bob J, speaking of Michael Keaton, I always loved watching Beetlejuice. That movie cracks me up. Eric in Geneva says, Nick, what did you think of Broken Lizard's Super Troopers? I like Super Troopers. I think Super Troopers is funny. But my favorite Broken Lizard movie is by far Beer Fest. That movie is hilarious, and it was really funny. I absolutely remember the critic screening of it. I went to a daytime critic screening of it, and I was sitting about two seats away from Roper, And it was there weren't a ton of people at the screening. Maybe a third full. The theater was a third full, and nobody was laughing. I was the only person laughing, and I was laughing hard, like really hard. Because I think Beer Fest is hysterical. I think it's hilarious. And I remember like Roper looking over at me like I'm crazy, like during the movie, because I was just laughing so hard. Nobody else in the room was laughing. 231 area code says Weekend at Bernie's. Weekend at Bernie's was one of those. Weekend at Bernie's was one of those movies that kind of came out of nowhere. You know, I remember going, what the hell is this? You know, and it's a very funny movie. A lot of credit needs to go to Terry Kinney. Terry Kinney is a Chicago actor, director. The guy who played Bernie, Terry something or other. I can't remember his name, but because he's brilliant in it. I mean, he has to play a corpse, and it's a really, really funny performance. Saving Silverman and Step Brothers make me laugh every time. That's 815 area code. Step Brothers is a really funny movie. But my favorite of the that whole thing. I mean, you know, Will Ferrell's made a lot of funny movies. You know, you got Anchorman. That's a legendary movie. Talladega Nights and Step Brothers, but my favorite is The Other Guys with Mark Wahlberg. That's my favorite of all of them. I think that movie is absolutely hilarious.
I think we talked about that the other week. The scene where the the Rock and
when they jump off the building, it's ridiculous. JB says Nick, Animal House still makes me laugh. Me too. 310 area code, Trading Places. Yeah, Trading Places is pretty funny. 608 area code says Multiplicity. Multiplicity. God, I gotta say, I have not seen that one. I haven't seen that one in a long, long time, Multiplicity. But that's a lot of Michael Keaton's. You get a lot of Michael Keaton's in that movie. If you like Michael Keaton, that's an overload of Michael Keaton's right there. Let's see. Hey, Nick, I'm Christine from Chicago in Dunning, the Dunning area. I know that area very well. Pure Luck is my pick with Martin Short and Danny Glover. Especially love the bee sting scene. It cracks me up every time. I remember not liking Pure Luck, but it was like, 25 years ago when it came out. 773 area code says, The Disorderly Orderly, Jerry Lewis cracks me up, me and my mom up. Me too. He's my hero. I got to go. I mean, there are a lot of Jerry Lewis movies that that make me laugh, that I love, that I absolutely love. I mean, I love Jerry Lewis. One of my heroes. But I got to say, The Patsy is my favorite. It's the Jerry Lewis movie that makes me laugh the most. I think it's got the best gags in it. But I would say the Patsy is the one that I go to. 815 area code. Oh God, Lost in America. 815 says Lost in America. I love Albert Brooks. He kills me. I agree with you 100%.
I'll be needing that DVD if you have it, Nick.
Of Lost in America?
It looks hilarious.
It is one of the funniest movies of all time. Truly one of the funniest movies of all time. 773 area code says, My son's age is 11, 9, and 8. Always laugh at the Princess Bride and the Batman Lego movie. They love quoting those lines back and forth to each other. See, they still do it. Brothers still do it.
I guess they do.
Yeah.
That's another one. I did the same with that one. That's hilarious.
630 area code, Police Academy and Airplane movies. I can go with the airplane, but I can't go with the police. Can't go with the Police Academy. Not on board with the Police Academy movies. 708 area code, Rodney Dangerfield movie where he goes to college. That's Back to School. Which also features a very funny Robert Downey Jr.
Yes, it does. I was just about to say
that. Yep.
You know what? I'm going to have to put this test to Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Oh, I haven't seen funny.
Those. I bet they are.
It's still fun. No. both of those movies are hilarious.
Nick, I don't think I've ever laughed as hard as the it's ridiculous. Ridiculous. And I don't remember which one it is, but it's the one where he's communicating or trying to communicate with, I think it's the tribal leader, and apparently the tribal leaders, their language includes spitting on each other.
That's the second one.
Is it? Okay.
That also has the scene where he comes out of the rhino's butt where he's inside the rhino and he squeezes himself out of the rhino's butt.
Yeah, yeah. It's still
intelligence
funny. Comedy.
It's there. Still fun. Yeah, no, it is. Yeah, it is. All right, we got to wrap this up. Here's Diane in Hammond on WGN. Hi, Diane.
Hey, hi. How are you, Nick?
All right, what's up?
I've got two. I'm sure they've been mentioned before, but these are winners: Blues Brothers and Up in Smoke.
Yeah, they've both been mentioned. Yeah, they're both.
Yeah,
they're both,
they deserve extra mention.
Okay,
always funny.
All right, Diane. Thanks.
Bye.
Diane doesn't sound like an Up in Smoke fan to me. That's why that was just so fantastic.
Maybe watching Diane watch Up and Smoke.
Yeah,
would
that
be
might be fun.
Entertaining.
All right, last one. Here's Joey in Wisconsin on WGN. Hi, Joey.
Hey, Nick. How's it going, buddy?
All right.
My favorite movie is What About Bob?
Bill Murray, Richard Dreyfuss. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's
the part where Bill Murray and the kid were jumping on the bed. Tourette's dad is just Tourette's.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, the best part of that movie is Richard Dreyfuss doing that slow burn. It's just him just going, the whole movie.
his
patience being tested. All right, Joey, thanks, man.
All right, have a good day.
All right, cool. Boy, a lot of people like to watch a lot of comedies over and over again. That's fun, man, you know, even if you know what's going to happen next. Okay, we're going to take a break, and after the news, which is coming up next, we're going to talk about shocking TV finales. If you have any shocking TV finales that you will never forget, you know, or TV finales that kind of made you look at the entire series differently, we want to hear from you. 312-981-7200. The news is coming up after this.
Oh, the shark, babe, has such teeth, dear, and it shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has old Maggie, babe. And it keeps it
right
out of sight.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here until 5 a.m. And Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. My main man, Steve Cochran, at 6. And how's everybody doing this morning? It's Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. If you want to jump in with your requests, it's any artist, any song, anything. And who was that and who requested? Well, I know what it is, but who requested it and what is it?
Bobby Darin performing Mac the Knife, and Sandy from Evergreen Park sent us that one.
Okay, there you go. And Wild Card Wednesday, 312-981-7200. So, TV finales that changed our view of the series. Shocking TV finales. That's what we're talking about. There are plenty, and plenty that people have argued about. Over the finales, and I want to hear from you guys. What are the ones that first pop into your mind? Shocking TV finales or TV finales where you went, what? Whoa, hold on a second, and it changed the view of the series, and whether it's a positive or a negative way. So if you guys want to jump in, 312-981-7200 for shocking TV finales or really memorable, crazy TV finales. 312-981-7200 for talk or text. When we were talking to K-Paul a little bit earlier, he mentioned The Sopranos, and that's the one that we're going to lead with here. This is an article on Collider where they were a whole bunch of people who write for Collider wrote about their choices for the shocking TV finales, and we want to jump in with you guys. The final episode of your favorite TV show means a lot. You've seen these characters through marriages, breakups, deaths, and sometimes even weird supernatural stuff. These series finales, however, are more than a final goodbye to some old TV friends. Some flashed forward of dozens of years, more than a few killed off a main character, and most tried to sum up a long-running storyline. And here are the TV finales that changed how we viewed an entire series. Kevin Powell was with us earlier on talking about sports, as he does, and you can listen to him on Rokan's show every weekday afternoon. The Sopranos is the first one that he mentioned, and that has to be one of the most talked about and controversial final episodes ever of any series. Whether you loved it or hated it, and they say just about everybody hated it, I hated it. I'm one of the people that I hated the final episode of The Sopranos. I hated it. The Sopranos series finale shocked fans when it abruptly cut to black while Tony sat in a diner with a hit on his head that could be carried out seemingly at any moment. Once they realized the blackout wasn't a mistake, fans debated whether or not Tony was killed. Series creator David Chase wasn't interested. More than a decade later, he told the New York Times, "I've got to say, I'm just bored with it. I also feel like, geez, if there were 86 episodes and you fixated on that, can't we talk about something else?" Yeah, no, because it sucked. Most people actually thought their cable went out. You know that, right? Like, a lot of people, like, when that blackout happened, most people were, they thought there was an issue with their cable and didn't realize that that's actually the way the show had ended. So, yeah, I don't know. What did you think of it?
I think I went with everybody else where I was just trying to figure out what was happening.
Yeah.
And then after a couple seconds, it's like, yeah, no, because you change the channel and you go back.
Yeah.
And you know your cable's working. And
right.
But
I hate it. Yeah. I hated it. Here's the thing about it. I mean, I like The Sopranos. I like The Sopranos very much. I was not as big a fan of The Sopranos as everybody else I knew was.
Same.
You know, I mean, I like The Sopranos. I thought The Sopranos was a very good show. If I had to go HBO, it's all about The Wire, as far as I'm concerned. Because The Wire, as I've mentioned many, many, many times, The Wire is the best TV show of all time. And that had a great finale. Now, here's one, because I never watched the show. I wasn't a regular viewer. But Star Trek The Next Generation made shocking finale. Because the original Star Trek was canceled without having a proper finale, Star Trek The Next Generation was the first in the franchise to have a well-thought-out ending that fit the series as a whole. The writers went with a time travel theme, setting a precedent for the series finales of two of its successors, Star Trek Voyager and Enterprise. In The Next Generation finale, Captain Picard goes back in time, revisiting moments from earlier in the series that viewers never got to see, like addressing the crew upon his first arrival to the ship, and now dead Lieutenant Tasha Yar at his side, we also get to see bits of the future, like the gray streak and Data's hair. But Picard warns the crew that the timeline has shifted and anything can happen. And I don't, I never watched it, so I don't know. Is somebody out there, you a Star Trek Next Generation fan? 312-981-7200. We're talking about shocking TV finales. And this next one, obviously, is another most argued. It's Lost. This one was argued about a lot. Ben, where do you stand on the finale?
I watched the first episode and
go through it.
Yeah, it wasn't for me.
Dan Shigrew, my old producer, man, massive Lost fan, and one of the few people who loves the finale. He loved the finale.
Okay.
I didn't see it because I gave up on Lost. I believe it was the third season or so. I was like, I don't even know what the hell's going on anymore. If you yelled, "They're in the afterlife," at your TV during the season finale or the series finale of Lost, you aren't alone. Many fans were angry that the reveal that the sideways timeline of the final season wasn't a trick of the island, but simply the old they were dead all along trope. The finales also failed to solve so many mysteries that plagued Lost through its six seasons, and rewatching the series isn't the same when you know you'll never find out the source of Walt's powers, where Karen's black horse came from, why Libby and Hurley share an off-island connection, or even the meaning of those damn numbers. Yeah, they left a lot of those things out, and I remember people being really, really angry about it. So, all right. Here is Steve on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, I got to go with the last episode of Cheers. If memory serves, it was called Run for the Road. But just when Ted Danson's sitting there talking to himself and turns out the lights and walks up the stairs, I you couldn't believe it was over.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, that was. I thought that was a great series.
Oh, it was wonderful. Yeah,
yeah, thought it was. I thought it was a great series finale, and I thought emotionally it was beautiful. I thought the way it ended was great, and they wrapped up a lot of the storylines, especially, you know, with him and Diane. They were going to get married. That's how it was going to end. Yeah. Was them getting married, and then they end up not getting married. But yeah, and that show. That was one of those shows. Cheers was one of those shows that was always good. Like, it was never bad. It was like everything about it was good. You know,
I agree completely.
Yeah, it was so great. Okay, all right. Thank you, Steve.
Yep.
Take care. Here's what they say about Cheers. The only thing better than hanging out in a bar where everybody knows your name is hanging out at one with an owner like Sam Malone. Throughout Cheers' run, Sam dated his fair share of Boston ladies, but his most memorable romance was with his longtime workplace foil, Diane Chambers. Sam and Diane, will they or won't they relationship gave a sexual energy and suspense to the first half of the series until Diane leaves Sam at the altar at the end of season 5. 6 years later, Shelley Long returned for the finale, where the couple plays out their dilemma once again, and the ultimate answer to will they or won't they, we know it will never stick. And, yeah, so that was a great show. Cheers was just great, and they ended on a real high note. There was no sense of, you know, there was no sense of disappointment at all. It lived up to the hype, and it was great. It was great. I also remember the night that that Cheers Cheers finale. They were going to be live in the Tonight Show with Jay Leno was live in Boston with the cast of Cheers, and it was going to be live after the finale ended, and they were all blitzed. They were all bombed out of their mind. I just remember because they were clearly drinking throughout the entire, because the Cheers finale was 2 hours long. And so now when they show the Cheers finale and reruns, they break it up into 30-minute episodes. But that was a two-hour night, and so they were drinking for two straight hours. By the time they got to the Tonight Show, they were smashed. It made for a very, very memorable appearance, I can tell you that. So, all right. Yes, shocking. Shocking, shocking TV finales is what we're talking about here. 312-981-7200.
Save your money, don't go to the show.
Well, I turned around. Welcome back. Said, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on 720 WGN. Who's the Zappa fan?
That is Lake Geneva Dan.
Lake Geneva Dan. There you go.
Don't eat the yellow snow.
That's right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We're here till 5 o'clock. And we're talking about shocking TV finales. And we would love to hear from you. Which TV finales were your the most memorable, or maybe the craziest, or the weirdest, or the most shocking? We had a lot here to choose from. So jump in here, 312-981-7200. Here's Mark on WGN. Hey, Mark.
Greetings from Cleveland. Two things real quick. First, I would like to mention the end of the Mary Tyler Moore Show, which might be the very first example of a shocking TV finale.
Yeah, no. It's a great ending. A really great ending.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Also, did you see Stephen Colbert tonight?
No.
Okay. Well, he had Kit Harington on, and there was a gag where he was trying to make him give away the ending of Game of Thrones, and one of the endings that Stephen suggested was the Sopranos ending.
Oh, is that right?
Uh huh.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch. I watch Colbert. Colbert's on my DVR. I'm gonna watch it when I get home.
Oh, hope I didn't give away too much.
No, that's okay. No worries. All right, Mark, thank you.
Have a good show.
Okay, take care. There's Mark. And the Mary Tyler Moore Show is indeed an example of a pretty amazing and shocking TV finale. And they write about it on the website here. One of the best workplace comedies ever made, the Mary Tyler Moore Show revolved around a tightly run newsroom of professionals, except one, Ted Baxter, played by Ted Knight, was the bumbling fool who ruined the rest of the crew's hard work on air so often they placed bets on it. The season finale of the Mary Tyler Moore Show changed the way you look at every joke about Ted. when the character's TV station is taken over by new management in the series finale. Management fires every single WJM employee you've come to know and love, except Ted. It's a pretty shocking episode. It's pretty funny. You mentioned the Seinfeld. We can mention the Seinfeld finale, which I hated, and I love Seinfeld. It's one of my favorite shows ever, but I hated the finale, and I think the majority of people hated it. And the thing about the finale that's so disappointing is that it was like an hour long thing, and they did like or maybe it was an hour and a half, maybe it was like 90 minutes long, and they did a special clip show before it, so it was like a retrospective clip show where they were showing all the best clips and highlights from the entire series, and then they do this show, this episode, you know, where you know, the Good Samaritan law, and then they end up going to court, and then that essentially becomes another clip show. So they had a clip show, and then you know, they followed it with another clip show, essentially, like very loosely plotted clip show. So here's talking about that. We were just talking about this, and we got a call on it, and it's Ron in DeKalb. Hey, Ron.
Hey, you just mentioned it while I was waiting, but, you know, the Seinfeld episode, I loved the show, but the episode was so bad, it may be the best finale ever because it made me not want to watch Seinfeld anymore.
Well, I still watch it, but I hate the finale. I mean, I think the one thing about the finale that I liked, Ron, is that those four characters end up in jail. I like that because they do so many sort of reasonably despicable things throughout the entire series. These four characters are not the most likable people in the world, and so when they end up in jail, it's like, yeah, that makes sense. I'm with you though. I thought it was absolutely terrible, and you know, lazy writing, and you know, it was basically two clip shows in a row. Which was just, it was very disappointing. Okay, Ron, thank you, buddy.
Agree.
Hey, have a good one. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's what they say about it on the website. As the air date of the series finale of Seinfeld, one of the greatest comedies of all time, approached, many critics wondered how the show could satisfy everyone who hoped to see their favorite bit character in the final episode. Somehow the writers managed to pull it off, setting the episode in a courtroom and allowing the gang's past foils to come testify as to their characters. Peterman, David Putty, Mr. Pitt, Uncle Leo, the Soup Nazi, Marla, the Virgin, Sidra, they're real, Holland, lawyer Jackie Childs, baseball player Keith Hernandez, and of course Newman were all on hand to explain how their take on the events they saw throughout the series. And in the end, the ultimate sentence is handed down by none other than a Judge Vandelay, a long-running gag that turned serious. Yeah, to me, none of that worked. None of it worked. I was pretty furious. I mean, the thing is that I never watched the show when it was in real time. I didn't catch up. I didn't jump on the Seinfeld bandwagon until a couple of years after it got canceled, or after they shut it down. And I actually saw the finale. I actually watched the finale because it was just such a big deal, and I didn't get it because I never watched the show. But it was such a cultural, it was such a huge cultural thing that I was like, well, let's just watch the finale and see what the deal is. And I watched it, didn't quite get it, didn't laugh at it. And then after I began watching Seinfeld in the reruns and getting to really love the show, and the nuances and the characters and the writing, by the time I got around to actually rewatching, the clip special beforehand and the finale itself, massively disappointing. So, let's see. Here's Dwayne on WGN. He's in McHenry. Hi, Dwayne.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right.
You know, I remember the finale for Mad About You. It irritated my wife and I because, you know, we watched it for all the years, and you invested time in the couple and the relationship, and then the finale fast forwards, you know, I don't know how many years, but they end up getting a divorce.
Yeah.
And you're like, what the heck, you know? I mean, I don't even think it does well in reruns or anything like that, you know, and
I wouldn't watch it now because you kind of know how it, you know,
yeah,
the relationship goes south.
Yeah. I wasn't a regular viewer of Mad About You. I did make time to watch the Jerry Lewis appearances, but I was never a regular viewer of the show. And then I just remember, you know, I had friends who watched it, and I remember somebody said to me, and this was a quote from them, somebody said to me that the show just kept getting increasingly more depressing because all they did was argue, and they should have changed the title of the show to Mad At You.
Right, exactly.
and I know a lot of fans of the show found that very frustrating. I totally understand. If you invest a lot of time in the show, I mean, that's why so many people get emotionally attached to these characters, and then if, you know, the ending of the series and they don't take care of it the way you wanted it to, you get angry. There's no question about
it. Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Dwayne, thank you for the call.
Take care, Nick.
Okay, take care. Mad About You. 773 area code says, what about MASH with Colonel Henry Blake perishes in a helicopter crash? Well, that wasn't a series finale. That was a shocking episode. Killing off McLean Stevenson like that. But I remember that being, I mean, that's a great episode of television. It's not the series finale. 847 area code says, how about MASH? That was one of the biggest series finales of all time. And then somebody said, St. Elsewhere, Tommy, who's autistic, sees the hospital inside a snowball, suggesting that the entire series existed in his mind. I remember people were furious. People were furious about that the whole thing was just existed in this kid's mind. And the hospital in the snow globe, people were like, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, the text line is blowing up with that one.
Yeah, no. I mean, St. Elsewhere was like really, I remember... Yeah. I wasn't a regular viewer of St. Elsewhere, but man, that was everywhere. Like after they played the finale, and when I heard about it, I was like, wait, they did what? So it was the figment of in the imagination of an autistic child, and the it was inspired by a snow globe that he had. I don't even know what to say on that one. That's not a good one. So, but the MASH finale was the highest rated. It was one of the highest rated shows ever in the history of television.
Yeah,
and I still think it holds some sort of record, or is in like maybe the top three highest rated episodes of television of all time.
There's a few records with that.
Yeah, and that was I remember I was a senior in high school, and every single person the next day, every single person was talking about it. So, all right, we'll take a break. We got the news coming up here, and then after that, we'll jump right back into this. If you want to talk about shocking or surprising or memorable TV finales, the phone and text lines are open at 312-981-7200. The news is up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. That's any artist, any song, anything. Who was that and what was that?
That was from the 262 area code, and that was Drop a Name song from the film Bells Are Ringing with Billie Holiday.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah.
All right. So, we're going to be wrapping up Wildcard Wednesday in a little bit here. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. What we're basically talking about are shocking TV finales, or TV finales that kind of made you look back at the series completely differently, memorable or weird ones. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Gary on WGN. Hi, Gary.
The only show that was perfect for 5 years with a perfect ending, Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad had a very good finale, and it probably couldn't have ended any other way, I guess.
You know what? I wish they would end The Walking Dead.
Well, I stopped watching The Walking Dead about 4 seasons ago. So.
And I did too.
Yeah. Okay, Gary, thanks.
Thank you.
Take care. There you go. Breaking Bad. Jeff is in Mississippi on WGN. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Nick. Could you explain the Quantum Leap
finale.
No, because I've never seen it. I can't explain it because I've never seen it, Jeff.
Oh, all right. Well, Quantum Leap with Scott Bakula where he time travels.
No, I know the show. I know the show. I've never seen the finale.
Oh, well, I didn't even know it was the finale. He gets beamed into the bar. Yeah, I forget what the guy's name is as a bartender, but they really didn't explain things.
Yeah, I remember that my former producer Dan Chagru was a massive fan of Quantum Leap, a huge fan of Quantum Leap, and a big fan of Scott Bakula. And as a Quantum Leap fan, he, if I remember correctly, he was disappointed with the finale. And I think a lot of Quantum Leap fans were.
I know I was.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, it was. Everybody had some issues with it.
Yeah.
But at least the way they, if they really wanted to, that's one they could reboot. They're both still alive.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay, this is one that's blowing up on the text lines, right, Ben? Newhart?
Oh, yeah.
One of the greatest TV finales of all time. One of the most surprising, shocking, and greatest finales of all time. Jeff, by the way, thank you for the call. Everybody knows it. Newhart was the show where Bob Newhart played the innkeeper. He had Larry Darrell and my other brother Darrell. But the end of the episode, you know, the show was being, you know, they were stopping the show, and so they ended it with him waking up back to the old Bob Newhart show in bed with him with Suzanne Pleshette, and it had all been a dream. The entire series had been a dream. And people weren't mad about it, because that's something that a lot of people would probably get mad about, but people weren't mad about it. I thought it was great. And any chance to see Suzanne Pleshette again is fine with me. I love Suzanne Pleshette. She's the best. Bob J. says, I hated the ending to Battlestar Galactica. How effing awful that last episode when the Galactica arrives to Earth. It could have made it much better. I'm assuming he's talking about the reboot of Battlestar Galactica with Edward James Olmos. I'm guessing he's not talking about being disappointed by the series finale of the 70s version for Battlestar Galactica. So, 815 area code says the finale of The Americans, the Russian spy series that was about the family of two spies and how the family was destroyed. It was so sad, but it was satisfying. Yeah, that's another one. The Americans couldn't really have ended another way. It was inevitable that was going to be the way it was going to end. 847 area code. This is another one that people got mad about. The Wonder Years. You mean to tell me that Kevin and Winnie didn't end up together? I love that show until the final episode. A lot of people were angry about that. Yeah. So. All right. Now, here's one of the weirdest ones. And this is in the Collider website article. ALF. Now, I was not a watcher of ALF. I didn't watch ALF. I thought ALF was stupid, and I never watched it. And it was one of those shows that was on in the 80s when I was in my 20s, and I was never home. I was always out. The finale of ALF is only something executives could have gotten away with in an era before social media, as the show was canceled but after a to-be-continued cliffhanger episode that had Alf almost reuniting with his alien family only to be abducted by government agents right before making contact. Yeah, that's how it ended. That was the final episode is how it ended. And everybody thought Alf was going to get killed. It looked like Alf was going to be assassinated, like they were going to kill Alf. Although the TV show ALF was never seen again, ALF himself appeared in an episode of Blossom the next year, and distraught children still bought his merchandise and wondered if the wisecracking furry hero would be around. 6 years later, they got some answers in a TV movie called Project ALF. I didn't know anything about, I mean, I never watched ALF, but somebody told me about the finale, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, are you kidding me? That's how they ended the show? Like Alf might be killed right now to be continued, and then that was it.
All I know is cats keep disappearing.
Yeah.
He's still out
cat,
there.
I want a cat. I want to eat a cat. Here's a great one, The Shield. One of the first critically acclaimed dramas that aired on basic cable, The Shield, told a complicated tale of Detective Vic Mackey and his strike team within the LAPD. As the series goes on, Mackey becomes more and more corrupt, teaching his team how to blackmail, kidnap, steal, and kill, while his co-workers, Detective Wagenbach and Wims, are always on their trail. In the series finale, widely considered to be one of the best in TV history, Vic Mackey accomplishes the impossible, managing to pull full immunity from his many, many crimes. The moment isn't as shocking as when the low-key strike team member, Ronnie, takes the fall, and it changes how you'll view all the crimes in retrospect. Yeah, The Shield, that was a great show. That was one of those, you know, and they said one of the first... one of the first, like, so sort of basic cable, pushed the envelope, changed the way TV is presented. Michael Chiklis was just phenomenal on that show. That was a terrific show. Phone lines and text lines are open if you want to jump in here. We're talking about shocking and very memorable TV finales. 312-981-7200. How about Gossip Girl? I was a huge fan of Gossip Girl. And the show slipped in quality during its like last season and a half, but I really love the finale. I love the finale of Gossip Girl. I thought it was very satisfying, and I thought it was great. A lot of people didn't like it, but the show did kind of fall on hard times in terms of quality during that last season and a half. Just wasn't as much fun as it was the first few seasons. A series that revolved around the secret identity Gossip Girl, it had no choice but to make the big reveal in its finale. Who was Gossip Girl? It turned out it wasn't a girl at all. It was Dan Humphrey. Although most fans weren't surprised, many weren't happy either. Is anyone tempted to go back and rewatch the whole series and count the inconsistencies, like how Dan was able to send all those Gossip Girl blasts while his girlfriends, while he was with his girlfriends, and they all couldn't be pre-scheduled? TV critic Laura Prudhomme wrote, "Good luck, Godspeed, and if you really are that masochistic, at least make it to a drink and make it turn it into a drinking game." I don't know. I mean, obviously there were a lot of a lot of holes in that, in the possibility of Dan being Gossip Girl, but for some reason it worked for me. I liked it. I think it makes total sense. And I was fine with it. I wasn't going to nitpick and go back and watch earlier episodes to see, you know, when Dan couldn't possibly be Gossip Girl because, you know, he's in a room with a bunch of people and he can't be doing the blast. Okay, here is Daddy Man. Go ahead, man.
Daddy Man's love.
All right, man, go ahead.
Okay, this Daddy Man's a fugitive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The Fugitive.
Yeah, that was the until MASH, that was the highest rated TV finale of all time. Yeah. So when they had to find when finally David Kimball found the one-armed man, I mean the ratings. I remember reading about it. I was really really young. I think I was probably about 3 or 4 when that aired, but I remember how much of a big deal it was because everybody wanted to know how The Fugitive was going to end. And so the ratings were absolutely through the roof for that one. All right, Daddy Man, thanks for the call. We're going to break here for some weather, and we've got a break for some commercials, and then we're going to come back, wrap up the show, and wrap up this talk about shocking, memorable, crazy TV finales. But here's your weather forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. For today, partly sunny skies and temperatures near 30. Tomorrow, a chance of cloudy with a chance of some snow to the south. High temperatures between 25 and 30. For Friday, lingering flurries early, followed by a decrease in clouds with temperatures climbing above freezing. Saturday, thickening clouds and rain, possible thunderstorms and highs approaching 50. And then on Sunday, windy and colder rain changing to snow showers. Your current temperatures are 10 degrees at O'Hare. It's 11 degrees at Midway and 11 degrees at the lakefront. Okay, let's take a quick break. We'll come back, wrap up the show, and get your texts and calls in here for shocking TV finales. Welcome back, and it's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here until 5 a.m., and coming up at 5 is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. It's Wednesday morning. Welcome, Wednesday year! Coming to a close. Who requested, and what was that?
That was from the 630 area code, and that was Blood on the Ice by the Riverdales for the Blackhawks.
For the Blackhawks, Blood on the Ice. They're back tomorrow.
Tomorrow night, yeah.
Tomorrow night at home. So there you go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've been talking about shocking, memorable, crazy TV finales. And we want to hear from you. Series finales. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Here is Mitch on WGN. Hi, Mitch.
Good morning, Nick.
Morning.
So it's actually a show that I love. And I'm not a big TV guy. But the my wife and I used to make sure we'd see the Mentalist. Or record the Mentalist. I absolutely love the Mentalist, except the ending. I was very happy that Patrick Jane, spoiler alert, but I was very happy that he actually did kill Red John.
Right.
And I thought he had it coming, and I thought it was some of the finest acting I've ever seen. It was just amazing. However, 10 minutes earlier, the way he was able to get out from in front of the gun that Red John was holding on him. The whole series, Red John was just this mental genius who was always a step ahead of this other guy who's an absolute genius. And yet, the way the writers decided to get one up on Red John was for Patrick Jane to say, "Can I show you something?" and actually get closer to Red John and then open his hand or jacket and have a bird fly out. You know, as though a magician might. I mean, it couldn't have been any worse if he had a flower on his lapel that squirted water.
Yeah.
And I was just at once angry and frustrated that these high-paid writers couldn't come up with a better way to just, you know, get running and moving and turn things around.
Right.
But then I forgave them a little bit with the closing scene of him actually strangling Red John and doing it with humanity at the same time.
Yeah.
I know that sounds odd.
Yeah. Now, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. A lot of fans of The Mentalist did not enjoy that twist at all. So, yeah it's true.
I actually thought that the guy that he wound up killing in the food court in the mall, I actually thought that guy should have been Red John. That guy was much creepier, much more believable, and it really threw me when he wound up dying because I thought this guy makes sense, but it's him.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Anyhow, great show.
Thanks.
I missed that, and I also missed life.
Thanks, Mitch. Take care.
Thanks.
All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Shocking or really memorable or crazy TV finales. Here's Jay in Kenosha on WGN. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Nick. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, Nick. Well, I'm going to embarrass myself. When I was 8 years old, I enjoyed the television show The Flying Nun. Okay, I was 8 years old at the time, and the final show was about a couple, an elderly couple. The woman was sick in bed, and the man wanted to marry her. So what happened was they did not have attendants for this couple, and so the flying nun and the casino owner agreed to be attendants for this couple's ceremony. And so with that said, the camera, the film, showed the characters
standing in front of their bed of this couple that were getting married, and the minister was there giving, you know, the
right,
the this wedding.
Right.
So I just wanted to let you know that, and I embarrassed myself, and I really didn't know that when I was 8 years old and I saw the original show, but I happened to catch a remake of it or a rerun of it, and so I just thought I'd let you know. I just wanted to embarrass myself.
Oh, okay, all. Jay. Yeah, mission accomplished. Take care. There you go.
Okay.
All right, there you go. Yeah, then Flying Nun, one of the most ridiculous shows in the history of television. I used to watch it when I was a kid. I watched it. All right, Parks and Rec. Amy Poehler's beloved comedy took a risk when it set its entire final season, the seventh season, in the future. The series finale went even further and farther in a storyline that moves from 2017 to 2048. We see the fates of our favorite Pawnee residents unfold. Andy and April have a boy named Jack. Ron is made superintendent of the Pawnee National Park. Donna is happily married. Tom is a motivational speaker, but the most surprising vision of the future is that either Leslie or her beau, Ben, we're not sure which, has presidential-level Secret Service. And then, by the way, Jerry, Larry, Gary becomes mayor of Pawnee. I thought the final season was kind of interesting. I actually thought that it was very, very interesting how they jumped in time like that. And then someone mentions the All in the Family finale, but that didn't go. That didn't, you know. I mean, that really didn't end because Archie Bunker's place came after that. So the show, in some form or another, continued. But by the time Archie Bunker's place came on, that show really fell apart. 808 area code says the ending of the show How I Met Your Mother really did a disservice to fans who watched it from the very beginning. It's true. Everybody went everybody's gone nuts over that. 779 area code says 6 feet under. Yeah, it was a weird finale for 6 feet under. It really was. 847 area code says The Good Wife's ending was horrible and disappointing. I've heard that from people who watched the Good Wife. Like a really, really disappointing ending for The Good Wife. 847 area code said, "Who shot JR?" Well, that wasn't a series end. That wasn't a series finale. That was just it was a season finale, but not a whole series because they came back next season and you found out who shot him. 847 says, "How about the Dallas series ending where the devil is showing JR his life, sort of like It's a Wonderful Life, the movie was." I don't remember that at all. I never really watched Dallas. I was not a big Dallas fan. Let's see. Yeah, 708 area code says, I can't remember. Did Gilligan's Island have a final episode? Yeah, I think it did, and I think they get rescued from the island. I'm pretty sure they get rescued from the island.
Yeah, because isn't part of the episode them trying to reacclimate themselves with the real world?
I don't remember.
I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, but I know that they can't end that. They can't end the series with them still on the island. You can't do that. A lot of people would probably go nuts. Roseanne's finale was so sad I was moved for days. That's Anita from Round Blake. And then the 815 area code says the finale of Magnum PI. I do not remember the finale of Magnum PI. And then someone else mentions here on the web, dinosaurs. If you were in the United States in the early 90s, you undoubtedly remember a baby dinosaur screaming, not the mama, somehow permeating every corner of pop culture. The star of a strangely popular show called Dinosaurs, he was known simply as Baby and had zero respect for anyone who wasn't his mother, who was voiced by Jessica Walter. Other than being a showcase for Baby to beat people who weren't his mother, with whatever items that were within his tiny arms, the show contained lots of hokey sitcom laughs. So it was a shock in the finale when went super dark, killing off every other member of the family and neighbor. And it was too real for TV mass extinction. So they killed off all the characters on the show. That's one way of taking care of it. So, all right. All right. Okay, we're going to we'll take a break. And the news is coming up next. We'll come back tomorrow. It'll be Triple Play Thursday. And we're hoping that Rod is going to join us to talk some space, lots of space stuff happening. So hopefully we'll get Rod Pyle on to talk about that. But we'll have a fun show outside of that anyway. So thanks for listening. The news is coming up right after this. Okay, thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back tomorrow, Triple Play Thursday, and we may have Rod Pyle on to talk space and much more.